Okay. Helps when I, unmute the microphone. It is April 1st, 2023, and this is the Journey Meeting, Project GFK CSI Dallas Presents. We are going to we're going to talk today about our upcoming conference, which is this month in Memphis, Tennessee. We will have David Ditton on shortly. He will be here about 1:30 to give us some information about that. I just want to start off with doing a share screen here real quick. Okay, for those of you that are contributors and also show up for our meetings monthly and to our conferences, you already know about projectgfk.com, but this is for people that may just be discovering us for the first time. You can visit projectgfk.com. There is several great spots on our website, such as our videos from our past shows. And also, there's some videos from some hidden gems that we've gotten out of the vault and are putting online. Plus, you've got the Shaw Legacy tab. And if you scroll down on the homepage, if you like what we're doing, you can always click the Donate Now button and donate to us through PayPal. And, of course, you can find the names, the list of names of people that have donated to us in the past and continue making donations. So I just want to throw that out there real quick, and we will get started on today's meeting. See. Sorry we didn't get a chance to see you in the month of February, and we missed March by just one day. Things obviously there's not enough hours in the day or not enough days in the month to keep us, all interacted together. But we try to do our best to together instead of just waiting until conference time. I would like to start off with Larry Snaff. I got an email from him this morning, and he's got some new information that he wants to talk about. So, Larry, why don't you take it away and tell us what you've got for us.
Okay. Thanks, David. Hello to everybody. And my co-counsel in the Mary Farrow litigation is on board, Bill Simpich. The last time we spoke was in January, right, David?
Yes, it was, I think, middle January.
All right, so the update is that, the government filed a motion to dismiss in our case, nothing surprising in it. And then Bill and I filed a opposition to that motion to dismiss. The government filed a reply, and we have oral argument that is scheduled right now for April 27th. We're not really able to talk much about the litigation, but Bill and I will give you an update at the Memphis meeting. But we feel good about our case, some interesting information was disclosed yesterday to me in the Freedom of Information Act lawsuit I have with the National Archives involving the Trump postponements. One funny piece is that the government spent about a whole day involving the Department of Defense, the Office of White House Counsel, the NSC and NARA, trying to figure out what to do with Donald Trump's tweet that he, when he said he was going to release all the records. And the dispute was whether Trump's tweet could be considered legal guidance. NARA took the position that it was. The Department of Defense, NARA took position it wasn't, and the Department of Defense believed that it was. Subsequent to that, it's clearly what happened is, based on what I've seen in this most recent dump, is that the Department of Defense, at the last minute, went to the White House and basically forced a postponement. It's clear that there's email saying that they reserve the right to engage the White House. They weren't happy with the way the process was working. So that's something that sort of confirms what some people had heard, that there was a last minute postponement. There was a couple of meetings in the White House of a small group trying to figure out what to do about the JFK records. Lots of confusion within the government, particularly because most of the people dealing with the JFK records were basically people that were used to the declassification process that's used under the executive orders, and they just weren't getting it with the records, with the JFK Act. In addition, we finally got our hands on the policy that NARA used to inform the rest of the agencies how the records were to be processed for purposes of the 2017 deadline. And Bill, I guess it's okay to say what I found in there, right? Or we want to hold off until we...
Go ahead and unmute your mic, Bill.
You're still muted.
Hold on. My position is, if there's public information out there, that's great. I don't want to reveal our legal strategy. That's different.
Well, so this document was just released. We saw references to it in the prior productions, but it finally was dumped yesterday. And it appears that the National Archives first used some criteria that are not in the statute and when they told the agencies how to process postponements, one of them was the impact on operations, which is not in the statute. There is also no evidence in any of the correspondence going back and forth that they ever considered. All they did was find identifiable harm, and there was never any express effort to balance that against the second part of the test, which is has to outweigh the public interest. It almost seems like there's an assumption that if they found identifiable harm, it was going to be postponed. There was no decision making to actually comply with the statutory procedure, at least in the written materials. There may have been discussions off the record, at the meetings. So anyway, so I'm still going through the document dump from yesterday, but those are the highlights that I saw from my initial review. And we've had a couple of interesting articles this past week, which we discussed on Jeff Morley's podcast. I don't know, David, if you want to talk about them now or whether we should talk about them later.
No, let's go ahead and talk about him now for those that either, have not listened or don't follow Jeff Morley's podcast. Let's give him the information now, Larry.
Okay, so there was a really good study done or report done by Greg Duna about the Walker shooting. The good thing in it was that he kind of came up with some compelling evidence that Robert Surrey, who was one of the witnesses, allegedly to the shooting, was actually in the Walker house and was a close associate of the Walker, of General Walker. He also had interviewed the oldest son and shared the oldest son and interviewed the younger son. They claimed, well, the oldest son, David, claimed that he and his father did target practice with a man named Lee, that they, after they had target practice, they would collect all of the shells, and that his father, Robert Surrey, took David to visit Lee Oswald and Marina. However, his recollection is that they had a dog and they had a young son. So my instinct is that this David, who's now passed away, was either misremembering something or was trying to be a part of history. And in fact, when I raised that to Jeff, Jeff spoke to the younger son and said he thought his brother was probably not telling the truth. The article sort of assumes that Oswald was the shooter. As people know, there were some significant forensic questions about tying the shooting to Oswald's rifle. For example, 7 or 8 Dallas police officers said it was a steel jacketed bullet, not a copper bullet, that it was a .30-06, which is a bigger bullet than a Marcano bullet. But the bullet in evidence is a copper bullet. So, you know, that raises some questions. And then, I don't want to go into the other evidence about, the Marina note. We can talk about that another time. There was another, article that was talked about the missing LBJ tapes. I forgot who wrote it. It's someone that Jeff knows and respects, but there's a question about, I guess Johnson's taping system was manual. So while we know that there were lots of meetings occurring with senior intelligence people and Hoover and the CIA, the fact that they, you know, there were some tapes where there's hissing, but other types of tapes where there's no tape, other times there's no tapes at all. So I don't know, we don't know if the term missing is an accurate term. It just may have been there was no taping done. But the fact that these conversations took place sort of paint a picture, complete the picture that has been painted before, that, you know, Johnson was talking to a lot of people probably about the assassination that weekend and what really was going on. I think that's it for now, David. If something comes up during the conversation, you know, that rings a bell, I'll bring it up. But we are going to be... As I said, oral argument is scheduled for April 27th in San Francisco. It's not available by video, but we'll have more to talk about that at the Memphis meeting.
Okay, yeah, definitely. And you'll be at home during that. You're not going to be there in person, are you? Oh, you're going to be from home. Oh, you are going to be there. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Company bill.
Yeah, I'll be there.
And I think Jeff Moore might be there, and so we're going to show up in full force. I'm going to try to get some briefs filed on, you know, to support us from other nonprofit organizations. So, you know, this is an important, this goes beyond the Kennedy case. I mean, this is an important case, and, you know, the government, I think, is going to really push back because there's concerns here about the power of the president.
Well, see, I appreciate that, Larry, and that's one more piece of information that we're getting today that is another reason why you should attend either in person in Memphis or on Zoom, because you don't want to miss out on the information that Larry and Bill is going to be presenting. Of course, it'll be available on USB flash drive and digital copy later on, but speaking of which, let me make a quick announcement. The November 2022 Dallas conference videos are just about complete. I have 2 more left to do. We had a little bit of audio dropout on some of the videos that I had to go back. Luckily, I filmed with 4 different cameras, so just because one camera loses audio doesn't mean that we lose audio altogether. It just is painstaking to make sure you can match the mouth with the voice, because nobody likes watching an old kung fu movie in today's time with the JFK assassination information. We want to make sure that, you know, we'll put out a subpar product. I like people to be able to view it several times and you know, not have complaints about how I do my audiovisual editing. So, again, Larry, thank you for that information. Bill, would you like to add anything?
I want to pitch in simply to say that I hope everybody here can attend the conference, and I hope that in the build-up to the conference, all of us could think about ways we can support the endeavor of getting to the bottom of this case this year, because with the lawsuit and the 60th anniversary and the 1 month period of publicity in November 2023. If we can find a way to work together in small groups and coordinate with one another, I think it would make all the difference in the world in terms of resolving this case. I'm going to present about the Malcolm X case to open up, because the Malcolm X case opens up what just one person can do in terms of revealing the truth about the assassination. If you want to know more, watch the 6-part series or even the first part on Netflix about the Malcolm X assassination and how they're cracking it. As we speak, two men have been exonerated in the last couple of years by the New York DA, same DA that is going after Mr. Trump, and $36 million have already been awarded to these two men who sat in jail wrongfully for more than 20 years. And now a $100 million lawsuit is being filed by Ben Crump and the Malcolm X family against the intelligence agencies that fanned the flames or sat on their hands and did nothing when Malcolm was killed. And same era as Jack Kennedy, same era as Bobby, same era as Malcolm, as Martin Luther King.
Oh, by the way, David, I just want to add, if anyone has filed FOIA requests or filed requests with NARA about JFK assassination records, can you please let me and Bill know offline? Because we may have some questions for you. Because that could also help us understand the process that the National Archives has been using, and it might give us some interesting facts.
So anybody who knows anything about anybody who has had interactions with NARA about trying to get assassination records, yeah, let us know. Thank you.
We only have a couple of handful of instances, and the more we can pull together, the more stronger narrative we can get. So if you know of anybody, or if you've had personal experience, you've emailed and, you know, for example, if you asked for a JFK Act and you were told to go through FOIA, you know, any kind of response you got or no response, just we want to know what your interactions were with NARA.
Okay, I presume that Malcolm blundered into that list.
We'd have to get something from, if you can give me something, some information about Malcolm's experiences, or Bill.
I know something about his experiences, but I think you have a very good point. Malcolm's kind of on hiatus right now, but I think we might persuade him to talk with us for a few minutes about it.
Yeah, because we might need a declaration from him, so to support, you know, whatever facts that you can share with us.
Well, all I know is that he's done FOIA for years, so, but I don't know what the status of all that is.
We'll talk offline, and I know, Joe, you got your hand up. Is it related to this question?
No, I was just wondering if you can get an update on how Casey's doing.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll have an update here on Casey just shortly.
Okay.
But yes, absolutely. Anybody that has information, I'm interested in knowing what Malcolm's gone through too, if we could find out about that. Go ahead, Larry.
One thing I forgot, David.
Go ahead.
I think at the January call, we mentioned about the Justice for Kennedy Act that Congressman Schweikert had introduced into Congress the end of December. We may not have known about it at the last meeting. I can't remember. This would call for the release of all JFK assassination records within 30 days of adoption. It would eliminate the exemptions that are currently in the statute, except for the tax. I think I forgot, but anyway, that bill was prepared by the only sponsor is David Swiker from Arizona. McCarthy then referred it to five committees, the Oversight Committee of the House, the Intelligence Committee of the House, the Ways and Means Committee, the Judicial Committee, and the Foreign Affairs Committee. The Intelligence Committee last week further referred it to a subcommittee, which means now there's another, you know, the subcommittees are the ones that do the work. and then they do a hearing if they do any activity, and then when they finish, they then vote on it. Then it goes to the committee, and if they approve it, then it goes to the Congress. So if any of you have representatives that are sitting on any of those committees, and again, it's the House Oversight Committee, it's the House Judiciary Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, the House Ways and Means Committee, and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. If you have any representatives sitting on those committees, please urge them as a constituent to have a hearing held on this bill. This is a very important bill. It's part of our triad of strategy that we're trying. Well, while we're doing the litigation, there's still a possibility of doing something in the House to get the hearing. We've had no traction so far in the Senate. So if you guys could do that, if you know someone, so all you have to do is go on to the website of those committees and see if your representative is on there. If it is, then all you need to do, if it is your representative, you can go to the directly to the representative's website and submit a comment through the website. If it's a representative that's in your state, but not your representative, you'd have to either send them a snail mail or email them a different way. But if it's your own, if it's actually your constituent, you can go right to their website, and all them, they ask you for your zip code. So if your zip code falls within their jurisdiction, then you can do direct. So it's, but go to the, all you have to do is Google the House Oversight Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, just Google it. You come up to the website of the committee. Look down and see if your representative, first you got to learn who your representative is, but assuming you know who it is, see if they're on the list. Well, alternatively, you can go to your representative's page and see what committees they're sitting on. So either one, you can do that. And of course, if your senators are sitting on the oversight, judiciary, or intelligence committees in the Senate, you could do the same thing. So I will close with that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Larry. And great information as always. I can't wait until we find out what you've got for us in store for Memphis. And then, of course, we'll have a journey meeting after the Memphis conference, kind of a, I don't want to say a debrief, but to go over what we learned at the conference, different presentations and things that stood out. We'll have that in later on this month in April. I want to go ahead and let's give Casey a few minutes. Casey, you with us? Hold on, there you go.
Look, he's on mute.
Okay, he's unmuted. Nope, now he's back on mute. There we go. We're getting sound now.
All right, it sounds like my, most of the time, because I couldn't hear a damn thing they were saying. Hey, first of all, I want to thank everybody for their well wishes and their prayers. It was touching to hear people when you guys all came back and interacted with me.
I think there's a loose cable.
Yeah.
Casey, hold the mic in your hands rather than put it on your back brace or your shirt or whatever.
I think we got sound now.
Yeah, try something now, Casey.
Good evening, good night.
No, we're back to some bad audio. Hey, Casey, let me walk you through this real quick. Go down to your, go down to the mute button, the microphone button, and hit the little up arrow. And when you'll see the selected microphone and the selected speaker, make sure they're both clicked as same as system. Yeah, they were getting something there.
Maybe we should go move on and after Casey fixes it, go back to him.
Yeah, give me just a second here. I'm gonna see if I can patch him through a phone call instead. So give me just a sec. Okay, we'll come back to Casey here in just a few minutes and see
if... In the meantime, I just wanted to tell Bill that I did 2 hours of Malcolm X in Dallas last November, and I have a ton of stuff that I'd be glad to share, you know, in case of need.
Oh, thank you, Larry. I know I'm going to use it more as background. It's going to be about 5 minutes, but it's a good intro to the story. But thank you. I would like to see your presentation sometime.
I will. I'll make sure you get a copy to see what Larry did in Dallas, because it was he did 2 hours of part one and part two, and they were both excellent. So yeah, so, definitely want to get those to you.
Especially the new information on H.L. Hunt, Howardson Lafayette Hunt financing the Nation of Islam.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Hunt and the Nation of Islam actually had a lot in common in terms of the way they wanted to see things go down.
Separation, of course.
Right.
All right. Well, I can't seem to get Casey. I can't get the number pulled up through Zoom to be able to have him call through. But let's see. Larry, why don't you, while I'm working on this, Larry, why don't you, if you're available, can you give us a quick rundown on the Alkin 6?
Glad to.
Okay, yeah.
Well, as, you know, a lot of times, you know, these conferences are so very important, and I believe that one of the most important discoveries was made in Dallas when
Gary Fannin actually obtained the original negative of the Alkin 6.
So we held it in our hand, and David was able to scan, do very, very high resolution scans, we put the negative through, you know, a lot of tests. We ran a lot of tests, and we concluded that it's a fake, and that the negative itself has been massively edited and altered. And we went into that. We did a show on that, and we presented. I also have it up on my blog in case anybody wants to check that out. And we went, and I believe we have proven that it's a fake. Dave, you want to add anything?
Yeah, let me add to that, Larry. So the new GFK show, which is a Gary Keen production, it's his show with I know Jim Fetcher's on there, and so is Larry Rivera, and I was on it as well. At the Dallas conference, this is what's so great about being in person at the conferences. Gary Fannin, longtime researcher, he came up to me and he showed a little envelope, and there was a negative inside, piece of film. And he goes, "Do you know what this is?" And I said, "Well, it's a negative, obviously." I brought it up close, held it up to the light, and realized I'm looking at the Alkin 6. Now, at this point, we knew it was a negative of the Alkin 6, but could we figure out a way on how to authenticate that negative? To see where it came from, was this something that was made? You know, what was it? Was it the original? Was it the altered version, or was this something that was connected to the contact prints that that were available to be able to match up. Because this negative was not just a pure cut negative on the top and the bottom. It had dog ears to it. It had some it had some tears on the on the strip edge of the negative.
And it's degraded some, hasn't it?
Yes, it definitely. And I think of most of that, there is some emulsion missing. There's some scratches. You know, but what I did is I took the negative and made high resolution scans. Now, if you remember the work that I've done with J. Gary Shaw's negatives and have posted on the Product GFK website, the scans that I do are definitely high resolution, better than what you'll find anyplace else. Well, this is no different. The negative does have some deterioration, like Larry just said, but it doesn't mean it takes away from the actual negative itself.
I just put it up on the chat there in case somebody wants to look at the images on my blog there.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Definitely check that out, and then you can go on to the Product GFK.
I believe it's like what you were telling me a little while ago about confirming and verifying the negative versus the contact print that existed, which everybody says is, you know, the correct image, and we're seeing that that's not the case at all.
No, I'm going to keep this muted, but I'm just going to do a quick deal here. See if I can pull up right where Larry is showing this at. The contact print.
You can look at my blog too, also.
Yeah, definitely look at the blog. But we went back to the contact prints, and then Larry did some overlays. I don't know if he has those available to show right
yeah,
now.
They're there right now.
Okay, right. They're on the. Yeah. Okay. Let me close this one out, and then I'll pull up your
blog.
Okay, but the important thing is on this is the. Let me pull this up here, and we can look at this. The important thing is we were able to authenticate the negative by using the overlays, like Larry does with a lot of the stuff that he has with
the original contact print.
With the original contact print, yes. Let's see.
A quote unquote original.
Well, yes, yes. Okay, let me see if I've got the right one here. Yes. Okay. Here we go. Sometimes it just takes a second to find what I'm looking for. Okay. This is going to be off of Larry's, this is Mergist.com, the link that Larry put in the chat log there. Okay. So the contact print, which you see here on the screen, we were trying to match up the center one here of the Alkin 6 to see if the negative that Gary Fannin had, was it an original? Was it the one off of the contact? So
there it is.
This is the contact print itself. Now,
the one that's in the public domain, of course.
The one's in the public domain. Now we scroll down. This is the actual negative that Gary Fannin had.
That's scanned by you.
This is the one that's scanned by me, yes. And we can see where it says X-Pan film, try X-Pan film, 6 here. Well, Larry was able to do the overlays.
That's 50. Go scroll up a little bit, just to explain, that's 50% right there.
Okay. That's 50% of the light coming through the negative.
And everything lines up.
And then we look at the contact print, the negative itself, everything of the writing that's on the top, the dog ear corner taken from the contact print. So we've been able to authenticate that the negative that Gary Fannin now has in his collection, he got it from another GFK researcher. We were able to authenticate that this is the actual negative. Now, the quality of it and being able to zoom in and be able to see what we've never actually been able to by scanning the way that we did, we went back to the original negative. We didn't go with a photograph and then try to enlarge it. Things get grainy. Things get out of whack. We were able to go back to this actual negative and then scan it and do blow-ups and see things in a resolution that we've not seen before. You can actually see the horror on the people's faces as the shots are coming out. And what talking
they've
about
seen, and what they've Lynch. Seen there at the top of Elm Street, which their attention is distracted towards their right, which would be towards the entrance of the TSBD.
Correct. Now, we've also scanned in over in the area, over in this area here, to see what has been blacked out, such as the woman with the camera. We were able to look closer in on the doorway, the inside the vehicle itself, over on the Dow Tech building, looking up on the catwalk, on the fire escape. Larry has went through and seen where he's got on here, like confirmed alterations, the Elkin 6 photograph in red, seeing different cameras that are no longer visible.
And basically, Dave, that's the point, because where you see airbrushing and obliteration of areas, that those are people that are holding cameras, actually, you know, and that's what they were hiding, because they couldn't, you know, they couldn't come up with those images because they were going to show something, things that were not supposed to be there.
That's correct.
And if you look at from the Z film, if you scroll up a little bit, there's this woman who I have called the, no. Yeah, just scroll up.
Hold on, I'm going back. Hold on.
I call her the Amazon because she towers over everybody. She's got calves like a lineman, like an offensive lineman.
Hold on, let me get back to it. I apologize. I lost all my windows just now. Okay, here we go. Okay. Okay, Larry, there?
Yeah.
Okay, you were explaining. I was getting it back up on the screen here.
Scroll up. No, down. I'm sorry, down.
Okay.
Just scroll down. Right there, stop. Okay. You see this woman here, right there, which is also taking pictures? No, the one on the right. Right there. She's taking pictures. She's taking photos. This is from the Z film. Okay, and as you can see, she towers over everybody. She's a big woman. I call her the Amazon. And the ones that are in the red circles, those are the ones that have actually been blacked out in the ultras in the A6. All right, so what we're seeing here is that the pattern is clear. Anybody who had cameras and is showing who was in the ultras 6, okay, those areas were airbrushed over. And here you can see the woman, even you can see the hand strap, you know, right there. Yeah. Obviously, and she had, if you look at the, you know, follow the path of her camera, she had her camera trained right on LBJ. In fact, if you look at the Z film, she's panning right to left, okay, and then she goes past JFK and then goes all the way to the top of where she's got an LBJ in her sights right there at this point in time.
And you can kind of, if you look at the Elkin 6 with the guy in the hard hat and the...
Right.
And you have the, in the Z film, you can see the hard hat here, and you can go right down the line and see the hand up. So we, you know, I mean, like I say, it matches of the Elkin 6 to the Z film frame that Larry's showing here.
Yeah. And then like, up here, that's an area that you can actually see the halo and everything of the airbrushing. Okay. This one, I think this one's the most egregious, and I think this one here is an incredible find. The African-American man, which was actually brought by Harold Weisberg in photographic whitewash. Go ahead and scroll down. And as, you know, we're looking further into the image, and there looks like somebody, you know, who's peering out of the window there.
Right. That's where someone thinks they may have been a gunman.
Right. In the second floor of the Dow Tech. But go ahead. Keep going up. But as you can see, there's no interference. Uh-oh.
What's the significance of that woman being blacked out, aside from the fact that it's being altered? I mean, why would they want to alter that?
Because she's holding a camera, and they already had all the cameras and images that they wanted to go with, you know? And if another camera shows up, you know, obviously, you know.
Hold on, go back to, isn't there a person you can see from that view underneath that guy?
Yes,
Yes. Is that, so is that the original? Or
well, that's where some people say, you know, but I'm more interested in the blinding right above that. As you can see, you can go down. Yeah, right there. Right there. Obviously, when that's why in the Altius 5, you know, where you look at him from that other angle, you do not see this black spot, you know.
Yeah, that shadow is weird. Why would there be a shadow in front of
it? It's an airbrush. Because it's an air, it's not a shadow. That's why if you go back up, scroll up.
See, it's there also. But it's not there. Oh.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, who is that from? That's the one from...
That's the Altius 5. As the limo is going up Houston.
Okay, and then the one that you see below with the black is...
It's the same guy, but in the Altius 6, where you got the front, you know.
So you're saying that the Altius 5 was not altered, but Altius 6 was?
Massively.
And why would they only alter one of them?
Because the Altius 5 didn't show any shooters or didn't show people with cameras and stuff like that. You know, it's when the limousine is still making its way towards the kill zone. So there wasn't anything, you know, what we're doing is comparing people, you know, in one image versus the other. You can see that, you know, this alteration.
So that when you're showing the blow up, did you blow it up? Or is that the way it appears?
No, that's David did the ultra high definition scan. And then we just went into those.
Yeah, I'm going to do a stop share real quick. I'm actually going to show you so we can actually zoom in a little bit better than what we've got on this. Let me pull this up on the actual scanner.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, can you tell me what resolution this went on?
This went in at
48 something?
This was, no, it was 16-bit black and white, and it was 3200 DPI.
Okay, so, and why, by the way, I look at all this stuff, great, but why aren't the steps of the TSBD not in there? Why can't I see a close-up of that? If that's a superior image, why can't we just have a close-up of that?
Because okay, people are in the way, the limo is in the way, you don't see it because there's...
No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking about the actual shot. Why is there no crop of the front stairs off thing? I mean, it's been an issue of debate. Since day one, and it's not nowhere to be seen anywhere in the entire web page, which I don't understand why that's missing.
Okay, I'm gonna do a share screen of the actual high res scan here. Okay,
please.
So, what part do you want to see, Bart?
Go up where the Secret Service agents are looking back to the tree and the go to the left of your mouse a little bit more. Yeah, go and now zoom in as far as you can. Put it to 100%.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can go actually and wait.
No, that's cool. Hold on. Go down a bit. Yeah. All right. Now go a little bit to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And up.
That's the real view.
Not great quality.
No, definitely better than, and there's certain spots that are out of focus. I mean, there's nothing I can do about, you know, fixing the focus on it. But, like, when you get in...
Cool. I'm not saying that. I'm just looking at the overall quality.
When we go up here and look at this... And I know I'm going to be with... I'm going to be back in Dallas again, obviously, for the 60th. And I'm going to have Gary bring the negative with him. I've got a few more scans I want to do of this. This was just kind of a end-of-the-night type of thing where I had the equipment. I know we were trying to get to the bar, but I was also trying to work on scanning in the book from Gary Shaw. But I'm going to do a different scanner and more higher resolution than even what this is. I mean, obviously, there's only so much high resolution you can do to a negative, especially one that we know for a fact this wasn't on the original, you know, this mark. There's only so much.
That's a hair.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's not a hair. This I took and brushed all this off and looked at it again underneath the light. This is actually scratched into the negative now.
So the most, it's a tear in the emulsion.
It's a tear in the emulsion. It's a scratch in the emulsion.
Yeah.
Okay.
We should
have a comment here, if I may. I don't understand why. I know Bart and others have done a good job on the doorway and nailing down all those witnesses. I know Dennis Morissette has done similar with some of the officers and cops. But I don't think any of us in the 60 years have ever gone through these 50 to 100 witnesses and detailed every one of them.
And because not all of them are known. And Don Robidoux, for instance, did a pretty good job with the information he had as such. But
who's
there
that?
Are Don Robidoux.
Oh,
can you
I've
just go to the right, please, of the image? Hold on, bit more to the right.
All right, but the thing is that's important is people are
more.
And if we can get people that we didn't already know.
Stop.
You can start with all the African Americans that were there on the north curb of Elm Street.
Yeah, I'm just saying that we're at a critical point in JFK research. We're going to lose a lot of people in the next 5 years because they're approaching mid 80s if they're still alive, and this is really urgent to get hold of people before they either have dementia or they die. And to the extent that there are people we don't know, I think somebody needs to take on this project. I think Bill's – is that what you're suggesting, Bill?
That's exactly – I mean, we need a geochrono project of the witnesses and the officers. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand why we haven't done it. I blame people like me.
I mean, we are – you don't understand. In another 5 years, we're going to be stuck with the historic record. We're not going to be able to supplement it. So to the extent that there are living people – it's imperative that we talk to them because they're going to be gone. That's part of this strategy that the government has been doing with the JFK records is they release records after these people are dead.
Delay.
Right. And you know, the whole, I think we talked about the Heath memo last time. You know, if we had known who he was at the time when, you know, 97 or at least, he died in 2018 or something. We could have talked to him about this investigation he did.
Yeah, because he investigated the anti-Castro Cubans, and there's not a piece of paper we can find on it anywhere in the record.
This should be the highest priority in the research community.
I'm sorry, who was that? Who was that again? Can you repeat?
Donald Heath. CIA.
His name was finally released in 2020 in December. He was the one that, you know, wrote the memo that discussed the CIA's, you know, their initial, when the assassination occurred, the Miami office was tasked with interviewing the Cuban community, both pro-Castro and anti-Castro, to determine if there was anyone involved in the assassination. We didn't know who he was until December, and it was because he died since 2017. But this is the most urgent thing left for researchers to do. Forget your theories. We got to get any living witnesses who have not been interviewed to get on record because they're going to be all gone in 5 years.
And the easiest way to do it is to just study the photographs and literally write it down in one place at one time based on the time of day. But it's called geochrono, and it's kind of standard for any investigation. And because we're an investigative team of 8 billion people, it's not well coordinated.
We have... By 2028, this is going to be a purely historic incident for the most part. We've got to get to these people in the next 5 years.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the thing that, you know, by doing having eyewitnesses come to conferences or what several researchers have went out and, you know, wrote books about.
We have to identify them and go to them. These people are probably in either old age homes or they're living in homes and probably are not mobile anymore. I mean, you're talking about 85-year-olds. It's 70 years since the assassination. If they were 20, they're 90, 50. Right?
Right. We agree.
They're 80.
Just as an observation, this is Bob from New York. There are a lot of those interviews with people who made a name for themselves after the assassination that have been captured. And I bring to your attention just one example. Mary Woodward, who was a reporter, was standing in that exact area of the photo of Alkin 6.
Right.
And she was a neighbor of mine, and she used to come to all my presentations. And I interviewed her. Unfortunately, I didn't do it with tape or anything like that. I was naive. but she has been interviewed extensively on radio and television. So there are some important critical interviews still out there.
What we have to do, Bob, is we have to get that picture and mark off all the people that have been interviewed. First, identify everybody to the extent we can, and then mark off the ones that have been interviewed, and then focus on the ones who haven't. If we don't do this now, we're never going to get a chance to talk to them.
I couldn't agree with you more. As a sideline, I happen
to... priority to research community, and we need to talk about this, David, at the conference. We need this.
I really agree. It's mortifying for somebody like me. I spend my time at this point just blaming myself for not taking this approach 10 years ago. But frankly, I think like a lot of us, we're so exhausted with looking at Daily Plaza that we've got battle fatigue.
Yeah, and people are...
Excuse me, Bob. Sorry, can I interrupt for a sec? Bob, can you say what, if anything, the reporter said to you that might be of interest? I'm curious, because so many people have been interviewed.
Yeah, Dan, this goes back so many years that I hesitate to try to repeat it, but she didn't tell me anything that she hadn't already been stating since the day of the event when she was a 20-year-old reporter. I think she was 24 for the Dallas Morning News. And she died. In fact, it was just this week, 6 years ago. It was really sad. She was with her daughter, I think, in California, because I had planned to spend some time with her and invited her. And so my interview is of not a value, but you can go online. She was interviewed by some nationally syndicated television program for quite a while, and her interview was captured. I think it was done by, and you're going to have to take this with a grain of salt, by the Sixth Floor Museum.
Bob, she wrote an article years ago about her experience as a cub reporter, you know, the day of watching the assassination and talking about her reaction as a reporter to the shots.
Yeah.
So the point here, Bill and I can't emphasize this enough. This has got to be number one top priority. It's great.
Hey, Larry,
people are focusing on, you know, photographs and new documents. We got to get to the people.
Hey, Larry, I'm sorry to play devil's advocate here. And, you know, just the idea, you know, there have been scores of people interviewed in Dealey Plaza. And, you know, I think it's been proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that there were shots coming from multiple directions. And, you know, I think we've reached a point where, you know, the search isn't necessarily in the details and the little rabbit hole of Dealey Plaza, direction of shots, et cetera. It's about bringing it to, you know, the higher levels responsible.
I don't know what these people would say. They might have a piece of information that has not been reported. It's worth, Dan, if we don't do it now, we're never going to know.
I'm not suggesting it's not worth doing. I'm just saying that in the scheme of things, you know, the testimony of people in Dealey Plaza has been explored extensively. And, you know, there are areas that haven't been fully explored.
We don't know how to
do it. And I'm just saying that I think I don't think it's the most important thing to do, but I think it's certainly worthwhile to try to
do it. Now, we can always do something in 10 years about documents and pictures. We'll have better technology. In 10 years, whatever people have to say will never be available again. This is why it's urgent. We don't know what these people are going to say. They might have something very different than what other people said. We don't know what percentage of people that were in Dealey Plaza. Do we have a precise count and how many people have been interviewed?
We don't have any geochrono of any worth. We've got great resources like what Bob's just mentioned, what Larry's just mentioned. Stuart Gallinor took a survey of 200 witnesses, you know, and that survey is very valuable. At the same time, these surveys don't do a geochrono breakdown of who did what to whom.
And who was where when they heard something, you know, the lone gunman people will say, well, there's a percentage of people that thought this and these few people. We don't have a complete database.
Yeah, and if you don't have a good database, it's like garbage in, garbage out. And that's been a problem with a lot of the case. It's very difficult for any of us, no matter how well trained we are in investigation, to prioritize with such a haphazard scheme of organizing.
And
okay, I'm sorry, I got a butt in.
Dealey Plaza, Bill, when we were trying to do the Living Witness program, people had just died on us, right? You know, people involving with Tippett and with Miami. I mean, it's the big picture. We need to figure out what witnesses are out there that have value. Dealey Plaza, Tippett shooting, Parkland Hospital, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, it's not a question of either or in terms of what Dan is saying, because Dan's right, too. You know, there's also a big priority in settling this case with a historical record and getting it to the American people and resolving this discussion, period, like they are with the Malcolm X case. That's why the Malcolm X case is so important. With just one person who had access to primary information from the shooter, that person was able to reconstruct the assassination where nobody else in the black community was able to do it. And you know why? Because they were fighting among themselves between Newark and New York about which mosque was involved in shooting Malcolm, and it tore the community apart. Our community is similarly riven with similar types of conflicts we don't need to discuss here. But these are the conflicts we want to try to resolve.
I'd just like to add one other thing, and this is only for historical perspective. It is not a hand on my back. When I first got involved with Bud Fensterwald with the Committee to Investigate Assassinations, the vehicle for that was my ability to do software development. And they contracted me, the CTIA contacted me, not for pay, to develop a database system just like what you're talking about. And I was successful. It took me 2 years working alone. And I can explain it at some other time because it's fully documented. In fact, I submitted it to the Senate of the United States, who incredibly at that time, to my knowledge, had no computing resources whatsoever. This is like 1972, 3-ish. Here's what the problem was. We ran out of resources and money because somebody already quoted the infamous phrase, data in, data out, garbage in, garbage out. Well, lack of data in, lack of data out. And we didn't have the people and the resources to populate this database to make it worthwhile. I can, again, if somebody's interested, I can share you what it looked like, and it could be done today. I still have the disk packs in my basement, and unfortunately, there's not a disk drive in the world right now that can read them anymore. Because
well, the helpful is if we could figure out what percentage, who those individuals have been identified on the pictures, and which ones have been interviewed.
Right, I'm going to butt in because I've been doing this for 10 fucking years, and I've always been looking at it, all these people, either on the street or in the building.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you now, as remarkable and admirable this idea is, forget about it, because we've had a massive issue trying to obtain these names and trying to recognize these people. Now, one way that we did, and I have to give credit to Linda Giovanna Zambanini from Indiana.
She's incredible.
For most of the work, she is incredible. Most of the work, because she basically went to high school yearbooks, found these people, and there are, for instance, if you look at the Alton 6 photo, behind the Secret Service car, there are a lot of women there. We used to call them the Truly Group, because Roy Truly was standing there alongside with Auguste Campbell. If you are looking, David, if you can call up maybe the right side of the picture, where the door is open with the so-called gas mask effect of the guy, if you can call that up. So basically, we managed to sort of recognize and put people together and say, okay, this person who is such and such is standing there, et cetera, et cetera. That's not just Alton 6, that's looking at Wiegman, that's looking at the Towner video, that's looking at several different angles and so forth. It is an absolute shit job to go through and basically try and figure out. Now, this gas mask thing, for instance, that's 3D becoming 2D. That's actually, if you look at it, you see, hold on, stop for a second. Right, where your hand is right there, that's not a bit of the car. No, don't move it. Go down. Yeah, that black line. Yes, that is actually... No, not the horse. It's the vertical line.
The
underneath
vertical
the so-called gas. Yes. That is a tie. It is not anything of the car.
It's
basically,
that's
Auguste Campbell standing there with his vest open, right? White shirt and a tie going down. And that's basically 3D, because what you're looking at, what you think is the gas mask, is actually a hand, but there's also Arcus Campbell's face right behind that, and that from a 3D perspective became a 2D picture as such. How do we know that? Because I compared it with other photos, and one truly is actually standing next to him, although he's not visible. The car is actually, it looks like it's been extended, but that's not it. So we had a massive, massive nightmare trying to put all these people just by doing the Truly group. Now, for 10 years, I've been working very hard on the front steps of the, if you can go to the front steps, please, David, on the occupants on the front steps. Yeah, hold on, stop. Oh, yeah, well, that's fine. Where is he? Right there. Okay, so this also, in combination with Wiedemann and with Darnell, we basically, I managed to basically figure out who's who and what's what and what actually happens between Audience, Wiedemann, and Darnell. It was incredibly difficult, and it took a long, long time, and we basically managed to identify everybody on those steps. Now, for me, the people along the road weren't that important because I was only interested in what's happening on those steps and inside the building. And that's what I've been doing and basically trying to find out. And Linda has actually assisted me trying to picture the people, find pictures of the people that were inside the building on the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth floors. That by itself is a massive, massive job. And I'm talking about roughly, I don't know, with the occupants of the stairs, we're looking at 30-odd people. There are a couple of hundred people along the road, along that line. Don Robodeau did a lot of work on that, and he's got a massive map that you can see. If you go to, I think, Deep Politics Forum, in the top four, the top sticky posts, I think there's one of them that leads to this map.
So if he had, if he did this, then the next question, how many of those people have been interviewed?
Not that many.
And the other point here is that the photographic film, if we could find the film of one of those people along the road, it might tell the whole, tell another side of the story. One other anecdote in the same thing. Jerry Hill, photo 1255 from the window. Now, the cops have always, he's always said that was taken at 110. But Bill Allen of the Dallas Paper says 1255. It's critical because Jerry ran off to tip it immediately after. And we think we can show that Jerry was actually part of the problem with Tippett, not part
of
the
problem.
No, but one other thing I wanted to say. For years and years, Luke Mooney has been saying he stuck his head out the window, but nobody's got a picture of Luke Mooney. And the reason why is because I think Luke Mooney and Jerry Hill got together and concocted their story, but didn't do a very good job in coordinating. Because Jerry Hill was the guy who claims to have found the shell, and so is Luke Mooney. And I think, in fact, you got a problem with Hill regarding those shells as well as the shells at the Tippett scene. I mean, it's just an incredible story. But if you don't have a geochrono, this is my point. If you don't have a geochrono between 1255 and 110, you can't prove it.
Right. And also with the Tippett Theater, right? There are people that...
Same thing.
Right.
Same thing.
Again, if we're going to... we've already set our piece. Bart, I know you've done a lot of work on the steps.
He spent like 10 years on it, like you said. It's more than a lot of work.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone has done and identified the people that are on the street that have not been interviewed, either we do it or we try to do it or it's lost to history, whatever they have to say.
It's the best, a guess. What Robodeau does, he doesn't put the evidence forward and say, right, such and such a person is such and such a person. And I'll give you a great thing. Gloria Calvary, for instance, is a person. If you look at this picture, instance, apparently she's the person that is in the second square on the right-hand side with the blue scarf. And Karen Scranton basically said, like, oh, no, that's me, this, that, the other, blah, blah, blah. Whereas Gloria Calvary was a much stockier woman, etc. It's really hard to deal with this. It's really hard to pinpoint these people. And I'm glad I just said, bollocks to this. I'm only doing the steps. And I'm only doing what's inside happening in the building because I'll get the pictures out so I can basically show who these people are. The thing is also, to me, yeah, what's important here? For me, there's only one thing important because this is how I look at it.
If I show you Oswald on the steps, the whole deck of cards falls apart. Everything. All your single pool of theory, your Secret Service, your CIA, this, that, and the other, all of it falls apart.
Okay.
That's, for me, the key thing to say, hold on a minute. If I show you that Oswald is on those steps, everything else tumbles.
Right. Well, that's kind of the story with the Malcolm X thing. You know, the guy who did the shooting offered an alibi for these other shooters. It's very similar to the Prayer Man situation that you all have valiantly fought all these years. And the problem has been that we can't get NBC and the Sixth Floor to give us an altered, you know, a fully clean copy, if you will.
And we're hoping that we're going to be able to get that, but we don't know.
So we've got to push in several directions at once. I don't know another
way. I
mean, but we know thousands of directions at once.
All we know, if you look at all those people on the sidewalk, there may only be five left that are alive. I mean, we don't know, but I think I'm just suggesting that if Bob has information, if we have that guy that did the map, we need to start, if we're ever going to try to get more testimony, this is the time. Or else we're just going to be talking about historic pictures and data. We'll be stuck with pictures and documents. That's it.
And those cameras would be good to find.
Can I put in here?
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, go on, Joe.
Okay, I've been holding my peace. I have to agree with Bart. I'm sorry. I have to throw cold water on this. I understand the passion of trying to find new people and new information and trying to identify people in photographs. But, gentlemen, there's been at least five federal investigations into this. There are at least 330,000 documents on this. There are 50 years of private citizens, or going on 60, investigating this. To cross-reference all of the information we have, incomplete as it is, inconsistent as it is, and to do it all chronology and contextually, and to say this is the best of everything that we have, and to get it done, it would take at least 5 to 10 years to do it, just to do the reading.
Well, let me say,
it's even start.
Make that 10.
But Joseph, Joe,
I understand your passion. I agree with it. But we cannot.
Attorneys do this all the time, and it takes a lot less than 5 or 10 years. I'm sorry, Joe. I flat out disagree with you.
We have a new tool now. Michael Connelly, who wrote the book Deconstructing the Declassification Engine, he had a couple of PhD people create what he called computer. I forgot the term. I'm going to be contacting him. There is a way to do this now with AI that could cut the years down. And I'm going to be contacting him about getting the person that he used. He did a study, and I watched his – he was on C-SPAN. You may want to watch it. And I'm going to be contacting him. I'm going to be pay this woman to do some more research on the Kennedy assassination using AI. Just a thought, but we got to think about – we got to be creative and think outside the box. Joe, I understand. I know what you're saying. I know, Bart, all the effort you put into, but I'm just saying that if we're going to do anything, this is the time, because in 5 years, it's over.
Okay, one more thing. So by focusing on the TSPD, that I did, because it's the place of where the murder was happening as such. To me, it's not Dealey Plaza. It's basically so I don't know if you guys know, but and maybe I shouldn't have tell you this, but I am going to anyway. I believe in sharing because I care. I hate hoarders. It's as simple as that.
That's
bullshit and keeping it. But fuck you, do. Share it right here. Bang, now. So I am, for those that don't know, the Sixth Floor Museum has made publicly available almost 500 oral history interviews, all on video. And I'm like, look, I'm writing a book. I was supposed to be finished by now and go, yeah, hey, Easter. Well, that's what I get because I've got about 40 interviews in front of me that I have to plow through, minimum of 1 hour, maximum 2 hours to plow through and to listen. And lo and behold, right, I don't even need the Darnell film anymore. I mean, I'd like to have it as a icing on the cake thing, but I basically listened to Kent Biffle. Now.
Yeah, there you go.
You all know Kent Biffle went
dirtbag
straight in with the cops and so forth. Now I'm going to quote you this. Hold on 1 second. Bear with me. Okay. So Ken Biffle, the quote which I discovered.
Reporter said, with the news.
It said, I have wondered often if I ran past Lee Harvey Oswald, in fact, going in with the cops. Okay? There you have it. So there was this guy who's got something in the back of his head and back of his mind and thinking, hold on a minute, didn't I go past Oswald while I was going in there? Because Biffle, out of all the people, sort of knew Oswald. I mean, because he spoke to him in 59 when he was in Russia and he couldn't connect and so forth. But he was aware who he was. Now, that to me is one of the soft type of add-ons of all the other bits, like, you know, watching the presidential parade and the hosting document and outside with Bill Shelley and the little Fritz, the handwritten notes and so forth, which I also got Robbie Robertson to ask Tom Stanley, like, how he got hold of those notes, because that was a missing piece of the puzzle, and gladly he asked him and Samuel answered the question. And on top of that, I'm really, and this is where I need to see, if you want to do something collectively, then get me this. And that's basically, I need Ken Biffle's notes. He wrote 20 pages in his notebook. That's what I know from his 20 pages of notes while he was inside the Texas School Book Depository, while it was all going down. Now that, yeah. So if you have his details, please give it to me so I can call him, because this is the holy grail. This is what I need.
Right. Good stuff. I will do what I can to get it for you.
It would be, for me, like another cherry on top, basically, on top of it all. I'm going to come to the States probably later this year. I don't know if it's going to be for the 60th. If I can really do without all the hoo-ha around it. Oh, it's a 60th. Yeah. Yeah, great. You know, it'd be nice to meet up for a beer with a few of you. Yeah, I don't give a fuck about the 60th. The way I look at it is that, you know, research is fucked up for 6 years in a row. Yeah? So it's about time.
That's
I want
right.
some closure.
I was waiting for the Bart Rance.
Yeah. And I'm stone cold sober. So, but no, in all honesty, I just need a couple of things and I'm done. I mean, if I get a copy of the film, that'd be great. Although I'm thinking Wiegman would help me even more. I'm going to go to NARA once. I want to experience the frustration of going through NARA. I've got to go. At least I can say, hey, I went to that shithole. And I went through, and these assholes are not doing
it. We don't know where the documents are. All of our staff is, they still have COVID.
Yeah, there'll be another excuse. But, and there's also stuff in Waco that needs to be checked out. But, overall, there are a few bits, but my book is going to probably come out in June. I want to have some traction before the 60th, so it does, is there for a few years. It's going to be 325 pages, so it's not a big book, but it'll probably have about 1,500 sources in it. It could be between 1,500 and 2,000 sources. So I'm going to obliterate the reader with sources, and I've shortened everything. So whatever you think, like, aha, that's bullshit, click on the link, and you'll have the document in question right in front of you. So I'm not doing any speculating. It's going to be the path to the destruction of Dallas is happening as we speak. So you're all going to get woo-hoo. So,
it's late in England, right? Right now?
It's quarter past eight. Yeah.
Okay. So you haven't toady yet, right?
No, I drink very little. I haven't had a drink since early Feb, so I drink incredibly little. And I've sworn off that wacky-backy as well a bit, so that's...
David Brooks has been asking to speak.
Yeah, go ahead, Brooks.
Can you put that photo up?
Yeah, let me share the screen real quick. There you go.
Just two quick comments. Going all the way back early on when we spoke about Surrey, what caught my ear was the mention of the one son saying that he's met the Oswalds and he had a boy and a dog makes me think of when I go through Harvey and Lee, the Cliff Chastain barbershop, a guy who eventually became mayor of Irving, was visited multiple times by Oswald for a haircut. On one occasion, at least, I think maybe even two, he brought a young boy with him. So just a comment. No. In regard to the photo, I think I got a hold of that. If I pronounce it correctly, I think it was the Robideau survey where he put all the witnesses along the streets and whatnot. And so I started populating images in the Zapruder film. So when the mention was made of the tall woman standing next to the bareheaded man who was taking pictures and whatnot, I ran over and grabbed this and I sent it to David's phone. But anyway, the list here is populated off of the Robideau survey. And then I also probably retraced his footsteps because I went through interviews, all the interviews of the employees. I've mapped all these people who worked in the depository, where they live. A lot of them live in Oak Cliff. What neighborhoods were they in? Who did they live near? Did any of them live near the Tippett scene? You know, and so on. But and they're specific on who they were standing next to, where they were relative to the limousine when a shot was fired and blah, blah. So you as you go through the frames, you can pretty well piece together in terms of who these people are. But what I found interesting is you've got the Southwest Publishing groups all clustered together on the right. You've got the Allen and Bacon employees over on the left. That tall woman supposedly is a woman named Jean Newman, who did not work in the school book depository. And if she's in blacked out in the Algin's photo, obviously they want to hide her. Did any of these women know who that individual? And I just did this as part of some other work I was doing. I had not researched Jean Newman. I don't know if Jean Newman is that woman. He did identify the two men standing next to her. And so I just threw that to David because it popped up in the conversation we were having earlier about people being blacked out of the photo.
Well, thank you, Brooks. I get what Brooks is doing on that. And any information, I mean, we look at Robideau and then
how does Robideau spell his name? I'm looking him up on YouTube right now.
I want to say it's R-O-B...
I-D-E-A-U-X, I think it's a French spelling, maybe.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but...
And again, we also need, there's a big hole with the theater. You know, and a lot of witnesses were never called, and so we don't even know who...
Well, one thing you can do, when you go through all these interviews and you look at each of these people, what they did have to say on the record, particularly the ladies that worked in the building, they're very specific. I was standing down on the curb next to so-and-so and so-and-so, when you cross-check their interviews, they all align. So you know they're clustered in those specific groups.
Hmm. All right, let's see if Casey's mic is working yet. Casey, give me a test 1, 2. No, it's still not working.
So Brooks, while we're working with Casey, when you look at the lineup of the people on the sidewalk, are there gaps? Like when you say all the people together have the same testimony, but are there gaps, significant gaps, from where the testimony of people were and where the people are not on the record in terms of where they were sitting? Like do we have
between the Robideau listing and whatever evidence we have in terms of interviews or what or
yeah when you look at the lineup
okay
see which people have testimony. Are there significant gaps along the sidewalk where we have no testimony about somebody that because of where they're sitting they may have heard something different, or we have a pretty good...
Well, you do have people. You have people who are left in the building. You also have a few people that were off on their own, unaccounted for.
Well, yeah.
When you go through the list, so they say they weren't in Dealey Plaza, they had gone to the bank or whatever, but they're on their own, so we don't know what those couple people were doing. I do think, by and large, and going back to Bart's comment, you know, who's who and what precise order at the entrance of the school book depository. We know basically who was up there. I do tend to agree with Bart. If in fact Oswald's on the step, I think they were all compromised. And Beale Fraser's been throwing shade on us for years. And I just say that because we know from what Larry's put together that Oswald rolled back and forth from Irving to work all the time. It's something that we talked about in the last few meetings. So the guy that was in the boarding house in Beckley is an imposter. Because we now know that Beale was giving him a ride back and forth to work every day.
Hmm.
So part of what I'm doing, I'm going back through Harvey and Lee just because I think as a lot of this stuff bubbles up, what you see, what Armstrong put together, there's certain things in there that start to make sense because he was never able to. He had this dichotomy of it's Lee who's up in Irving all the time, and it's Oswald who's down in the boarding house. Well, if you flip those around, because we now know that it was Oswald who was getting a ride every day in, of the week from Irving with Beale Fraser, it's Oswald who's up in Irving. Hence, all the sightings that are identified by Armstrong start to make sense. Beale has a lot to tell us. I don't know at what point he'll...
Absolutely. Where was he for 6 hours that day?
Yeah.
That's right. I agree.
He's in the hospital.
But for everybody, I just posted the Roberto map right there on the chat.
Oh, good. I couldn't find him anywhere in Google. All right.
It's in a PDF.
Can I just share something else? I'll tell you a couple of findings. The biggest shocking one for me, and this is only because I put Oswald's interrogations in the chronology, and the chronology, which I've been publishing as a paper for the last couple of years and been updating and updating and updating. From what I have, all the evidence, and I've got a ton of evidence.
Hey, just a second.
I basically can say that...
down below on the left, it's...
Oh, no, give Casey first.
Okay.
We can hear Casey.
All right.
Okay, we have Casey. Microphone working. Go ahead, Casey.
You guys can hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, first of all, what a great meeting so far. What I want to point out to you is,
Hey, Casey, it's Brooks.
Hey, Brooks.
Sorry to jump in, but you look like an ATF agent. Just want to let you know that.
you want to see my badge? I got a 10-pound back brace on, which is my badge. But anyway, what I want to do is I want to thank everybody for the well wishes and the prayers. I guarantee I think all of them really helped. And I just want to let you know that I am up and around and I'm walking and it's just a long process. And my daughter keeps reminding me every day that I have to have a positive attitude. And I do, but I've never slowed down this much in my entire life. But I am reading a lot more and doing a lot more research and listening to you guys. I do want to point out, again, thank you guys all very much for your concern. But at the same time, on the 40th anniversary, Brian Edwards and I and David brought probably about 50 to 100 students down to the Dealey Plaza like we had done for about 35 years. And one of my students was with me, and she looked at me, and she goes, "What are you looking at?" And I said, "I'm looking at older people." And she goes, what do you mean?" And I said, "Well, you guys are – the young lady I was with, she was looking at guys, okay?" So anyway, I said, I'm looking at a little bit of older people." And I said, I've got one pointed out. And she says, "You mean that lady with the placard over there?" And I said, "Yeah." And – so I said, "You can come with me." I said, "I'm going to come over and I'm going to interview her, but I'm going to introduce myself to her," because she had a sign that said, "I was here that day." And so I asked her, I said, "Well, you were here that day?" Introduced myself, so on and so forth. I have her name. And she said that she was 6 years old that day. She had her hand in her mother's hand on that sidewalk. And I tried to find her on that sidewalk. and it, she was more closer to the Texas School Book Depository building than she was to the Grassy Knoll, the North Grassy Knoll. And so I asked her questions, and she was kind of taken back because she wanted to know who I was. And I said, well, I said, I'm a researcher, but I said, I'm a teacher, and I brought students down here. And so finally she told me, she says, I was 6 years old. And I said, do you remember anything at all? She goes, yeah. I heard two shots. And I said, from where? She goes, right over there. And she pointed to the North Grassy Knoll. Now, I have her name. I don't have her permission to give you guys that name. But at the same time, I'm sitting there going, you know, there are people who were whisked away. This little girl said her mom grabbed her, found the car, got in the car, and left and told her to kind of keep her mouth shut because there's something going on down here and nobody needs to know about this. And basically, I guess scared the hell out of her. So that was the first time she had been back after 40 years, and she was still scared to death. So there are people out there. There are a lot of people out there that we probably haven't touched, but the information that you guys are presenting out here, is wonderful because we do know as researchers, we come across people, that have interviewed individuals, and whether they be on the sixth floor roster up there, the 500 interviews that Bart was talking about, but there are a lot of people out there that have interviews. And there's some interviews of individuals that we don't even accept as researchers. We've turned our back on some of these guys, but some of these guys who have done some research and recorded people, we need to turn to some of those things, even if we don't believe what they've actually done was good or beneficial for us. And a lot of us have animosity towards some of these people. So I'm starting to set some of that aside because I'm with a lot of you guys on this. I don't trust some of the people who have done some of these things, but we're going over their interviews again, and I'm finding out that, wow, how did we miss this? Well, we missed it primarily because we built a wall in between myself, and I'm talking about myself, and I know that you guys might be the same way, of who this person is, whether this person is somebody that we can actually believe in and trust in, but at the same time, I'm going back over some of those. And it's amazing, you know, some of the material that these guys have. So I want to throw that out as a positive thing. But in order to try to get the amount of research done that you guys are talking about, man, it's a, I mean, I have to look at Bart, and I have to look at everybody. I have to look at Bill, Larry, at Brooks. I mean, my God, when I talk to Brooks on a daily basis, holy cow, he is so meticulous. And I know you guys are too. Bill, you are. Larry, you are. And Bart, there's no doubt in my mind. And Joe, very, very meticulous going into this. And I know Larry Rivera does the same thing. And I wish I could give all you guys awards for, you know, all the time that you have spent doing this work. It's probably a lot of unsung heroes, and you guys are a lot of the unsung heroes. But at the same time, people need to know what took place 60 years ago. And all of us go off on different tangents.
I hope Casey, to have talked to this AI person before the Memphis, because I have some ideas about how we can try to use this to speed up the process. But I need to talk to her first. But you're right. And this... There's also, I know you guys are working on this digitalization project, and like, there's still authors out there, like, what happened to Livingston's notes?
Yeah.
Right? You know, Davis's.
Harry Livingston?
Yeah.
Harry. Oh, well, I've got tons of this stuff.
Okay.
Didn't Malcolm Blunt buy it?
John Davis.
Yeah.
All his stuff. Yeah, I know there was a dispute between his living companion and his sister at one point. Don't know where all his files went.
How about David Lipton?
They're working on Lipton's files. I don't know who. Matt Dowsett knows someone who has got access to that stuff.
Because those are the things, again,
Bill Poulter.
there are authors who have witnesses. They decided what to publish because they had a certain viewpoint. But as Bill and I, as lawyers, we know that, there may be nuggets in those interview notes that the author didn't realize was important.
Well, yeah, there's, depending on what they were writing at the time.
Yeah.
But years later, you go back, I'd like to find out, I know there's got to be more stuff in Jim Marsh's files.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we know where those files are at. It's just getting access to them.
Wait, we know because I thought his wife just let everybody come in and take it.
Well, yeah, but I know who's got the files.
So, oh.
Yeah, as far as at least the computer and the hard drives. But it's getting access to those to digitize them or make copies of, so that way we can find out what else is in there that Jim never published.
Is that person trying to monetize that?
No, they just are making sure that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands.
Best thing to do then is just to dump it online, that it don't fall in anyone. So put it in everyone's hands so it can't go into wrong hands. It's simple.
There you go.
Yeah.
And hey, I'm not against that. I got some files that, I got from Jim over the years. I have them now. I'm just kind of wondering what, I need to go back. I haven't looked at them in probably years. At least 10. I need to kind of go back through and figure out what's in there. There may not be anything worth a damn. And then again, we may have, even if it's one extra, just to throw out there.
At least those are fixed on paper.
Yeah.
It's like talking to a person that's about to, like what Casey did, that was valuable. And
right.
As opposed to like someone that's living and we haven't talked to yet.
Yeah.
Those that don't know.
Oh, by the way, I got all the information on Kent Biffle's family right here.
Email it to me. Please. Mail it to me. Bill Poulter, who passed away about a week or 10 days ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. He's very big.
He's very big on Tippett, et cetera. And he also, Malcolm said, get access to his archive because it's very important that it needs to be preserved. So,
that's fantastic.
I don't know what's going to happen, but the thing is that his son, Greg, will probably take care of that, but how it comes out and stuff like that. For me, it's just putting everything out in the open. For those that don't know, I worked on Matthew Smith's material. He's an author as well. He wrote a lot about Kennedy, RFK, JFK, but also Marilyn Monroe. And I got two bags full of stuff from his collection that I've digitized now and which will probably be released in about a month's time. And Malcolm as well. I think I've done about 10,000 pages this year so far, this quarter. We're reaching the end of all the stuff that he basically lets others have. His Vesiana stuff is inaccessible. Forget about it. You're not getting it. I'm working with it. Blah, blah, blah. So, and also Malcolm is, like Bill already said, he's semi-retired. He's taking it easy. He's in his 70s and he's, he takes a break. And I'm really going to blame him. So, but he might come over to Dallas this year, depending on what the program's like, and if it's interesting to come and so forth. Right. What I was about to say earlier, just before, Casey, got through is, I found out a couple of things that I'm more than willing to share, to be in the book, of course. Anything, this is my opinion after reading the evidence. There were 10 women on the fourth floor. Now, Judith McCauley, her daughter, taught me that originally she said she was on the fourth floor, but then her and her mate, pal, friend, basically changed. She said that she was on the steps, of which there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever that she was there. But basically that made the FBI tell McCauley to change that also, that she was on the steps as such and not on the fourth floor. That got me thinking. I'm going, why is that? Why do they want to change? Why is the FBI saying that you're not on the fourth floor? You need to say that you're on the front steps. Well, the fourth floor, we know that with Victoria Adams and Sandra Stiles basically took the stairs down. That, of course, is a threat to the scenario of Oswald going down the stairs as such. But then you've got Dorothy Garner, and Dorothy Garner is important. Her testimony, for instance, her interview is completely deep-sixed. and only a letter from Martha Jo Stroud that came out that Barry Ernest found and basically showed that Martha Jo Stroud saw the girls go down before Roy Truly and a helmeted policeman came up. Okay, fine and dandy. And I started looking into it. What Barry Ernest didn't do was then basically check out what else is was happening on the fourth floor. And if you take the affidavits of all these women on that floor into an account, then there are 8, but I say there were 10 women on that fourth floor looking out the window on the fourth floor out down to the parade. You've got you've got the 4 women, of which one of them took that film, and of the parade going past, but there were others. And the fourth floor wasn't like small offices. There were just large rooms. There was one big room, storage room right next to it, and the other back half of that fourth floor was just open. But what they did was that they went to the west window and they looked out to see what was happening. And how do we know that? The guys from the fifth floor, Harold Norman, Bonnie Ray Williams, James Jarman, went down those steps and stopped and talked to these women. Now, how do we know that? That's because it's being mentioned at the beginning of their statements. But when it comes to the Warren Commission, their reports, it basically never happened at all. And I thought, that's weird. But then I started looking at what happened on the third floor. Now, on the third floor, yeah, there were 3 women in a little room in an office. And out of all the people in that entire building, they didn't hear the shots. And I'm going, how is that possible? How is that possible that when the women, the people on the fifth, the fourth, the second, and the first can hear shots wherever they were, yeah? And those 3 people, that what happened, because their position of their office was right in the window. They could just stand up and look and see what was happening behind the picket fence and also in the railroad area right behind it. And I thought, gee, that's really interesting. If I look at the third floor and the fourth floor, and the fact that the men of the fifth floor first went west after they sat in those windows and also went westwards, the whole thing of like the whole west view as such is trying to basically to be as obfuscated as much as possible. And the only reason, the only way I found that out was basically by get all the statements and all the interviews and so forth, and then basically manage to build some sort of picture where basically all these people that have an excellent view as such, Otis Williams, who stood on the front steps and who is seen in Origin 6 with his hand in his white shirt right above, what's her name?
And his big belly?
Yeah, sticking out with his white shirt. He sticks out, pot belly. And he basically went up to the fourth floor as well. Why did he go to the fourth floor? Because he had a great view. He could see what the hell was going on. The third floor officers prevented doing that. He knew that if he go to the fourth floor, he had an excellent view seeing what was happening, because that's where he thought the shots come from. And other than that little sentence that he went up to the fourth floor, there's absolutely no mention like, oh, well, what did you see and what happened and so forth. As a matter of fact, in another statement, it just says, I went to the second floor, back to the office. But he's not seen in that office until 25 minutes later. So, I thought, okay, that's an interesting thing. So are the feds really messing about with this? And of course they are. They're trying to obfuscate all that, those western, those building, the views from the west side up into the railroad yard about all the commotion and all the happenings and so forth, as much as that. But then on top of that, basically making these women, all these 3 women say, I didn't hear a shot. And then one of the women, there's another woman who basically walks from the third floor to the, from the third floor west side onto, what's his name, who had the office and who's captured in a Dillard photo. I'm sorry, sometimes names is, I mean, I've got 100 people that I'm dealing with. So, gosh, give me his name. Basically said like, well, I heard the shot because the window was open. Well, the office of that particular person, his window was shut, as you can see in the Dillard photo, because he had air conditioning in that office as such. So little bits, this, that, and the other.
My most favorite bit is just by the chronology, which I started with, is that from the chronology and from the work that I had to do late last year, because I finished my papers last year in June, and I was like, well, I'm done with this. I'm going to be around for a few months, and then I'm going to see you later. But, of course, there you go. Malcolm goes, you should do a book. I'm like, no, you should do a book. And I'm like, oh, my God, why? No, there's too much information in this that nobody knows about, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. So I basically had to think about how to turn these four papers into a book. The chronology basically told what I already put together. Had made me having to go into areas that I had absolutely no interest in. So I had to go into the fingerprints, the palm print, and the nitrate test. So a ton of info. Malcolm had tons of info on it, all from his research from back in the day when he worked on Harriet and Lillian. That's how I call it. I hate that book. But anyway, so he basically gave me all this paperwork. And from the paperwork, to give you the nutshell version of the whole thing, is they had no evidence to tie the rifle to Lee Harvey Oswald's by the time that they allegedly arraigned him for the murder on the president at 12:30, 1 o'clock, whatever, 1:30, I don't care. Basically, it was supposed to happen. Now, there's already massive doubts about that it actually happened as such, but then again, there's half a dozen cops who attest to it. But from the evidence that they have, first of all, from the fingerprints that you look at, there's a nice dog and pony show in front of the press that James Murray photographed. Really nice, where the coppers come out once, one at a time, three of them. Barnes is one of them. J.D. Hicks is one of them. And they come out and show the cards, this, that, and the other. Well, here's the kicker. From the pictures, I made enlargements and I checked out the positions of the prints on the fingerprint cards because they were so sloppy. They didn't put the fingers like really deeply inside the 5x2 formation of squares on the cards as such. So I managed to see like, oh, one is going over the edge, one's below the edge, this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. Well, the thing is that all those cards disappeared. Why is that? Because Vincent Drain came around and collected all the cards, the fingerprint cards and the palm prints, before 1 o'clock. Now, they basically put the time down that they said they got the cards at 11:45. That's rubbish as well, because Vince Drain is seen during the press conference of Henry Waite, which is happening right after Oswald's basically been having his press conference and basically comes out as such. So from the timing perspective, there's something really wrong. But on top of that, these cards disappear. They cannot be found again. The HSCA has got massive issues. Again, I've got everything I say is documented, can be backed up. So the HSCA says, where are the original cards? Well, we can't find them. If you look at the cards of UNT, University of North Texas, you have cards that are originals, but they are taken after the press conference, taken by Carl Knight. And Carl Knight was on the fourth floor. Why did they did that? Because they gave all the cards of the farm prints and the fingerprints away to the feds. They didn't have any cards for themselves. So 3 hours after Oswald's already done three sets of print cards, he's doing it again. They're doing it again with him as such. Those cards, the originals, they're at UNT. But the cards from before are only delivered as Warren Commission exhibits. If you check out,
are they protected, those UNT cards?
What do you mean by protected?
Are they in the archives or are they sitting on the stacks?
They're available digitally, so you can look at them and click on them. They're yellowish paper. So the whole thing with the fingerprints and the palm print and the nitrate test doesn't get done until in the morning.
Are they digitized? I'm sorry, just one other question. Are they digitized, Malcolm? Can you see them online?
Yeah,
I mean, in my paper, you can click on them and it takes you straight to exactly which one is which answer.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
It's all there. So they basically have nothing physically in their hands to basically say, you know what, this palm print is coincides nicely with the barrel print, because that's another thing. The weapon, when day goes out, yeah, and shows up the weapon, well, we all know that world-famous movie of Carl Day going through the corridor, showing it off. He's actually doing that to send it to Marina, and Marina doesn't recognize the weapon. That's another thing. I'll get back to that in a minute. So when Carl Day does all that, that's three, four hours before actually they are swapping the rifle to Vincent's Reign and giving it to them, for them to take it to Washington. They have absolutely nothing to nail Oswald. And the clincher is also over the fact that the nitrate tests aren't tested until early in the morning of the 23rd and come around. Don't forget, the Heidel ID doesn't exist until Saturday morning. There is no Heidel ID on Friday. I'll tell you that as well. The only person who claims to is our friend, Pinky Westbrook, yeah, who basically all of a sudden with, what's his name, from the FBI, no, it's not Barris, it's the other guy, who basically all of a sudden goes, hey, hold on a minute, what have I found here? Oh, I've got a wallet! But that wallet isn't submitted in evidence on Friday at all. The evidence shows that no police officer on the 22nd makes mention of any Heidel ID whatsoever. I've got Hill being interviewed twice. Yeah. I've got Paul Bentley being interviewed twice. And there's not a mention of a Heidel ID whatsoever. And I thought I figured it all out, this, that, and the other. And then all of a sudden I come across a document where a document is sent to the 112th Military Intelligence. And in that document, but this is a late evening document.
Oh, no, I found one for 3:15.
That comes from Robert E. Jones, and all that is a real shaky ground as well. So in this article, the whole thing of Robert E. Jones is incredibly shaky and crap and wouldn't stand at all in a courtroom at all. But this one is even better, because in this one it says the following related to Region 2 by Captain Dowdy, Dallas Police. Subject's wife has signed a statement stating that subject owned the rifle, which is believed to be the weapon that fired the shot that killed President Kennedy and wounded Governor Colony. This info has not been released to the public. Now, that's all fine and dandy, but Marina Oswald was showing the rifle at 8 o'clock in the evening after Carl Day brought it into room 317. Down from the fourth floor, and Marina cannot recognize the rifle. If you look up at UNT, you look at Marina Oswald's statement, it's all there. She doesn't recognize the rifle. So basically, Dowdy is just talking, as they say in England, porkies, porky pies, lies, and basically just rubbish. Just, the whole thing is just rubbish. They cannot tie the rifle, not with Marina, not with the fingerprints, not with the palm prints, and definitely not with the nitrate test, and on top of that, also the Heidel ID. The first time they actually mention the Heidel ID from the notes and the reports of the interrogations is not until Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m. That's the first time the Heidel ID is mentioned. And of course, that's after the feds miraculously find the order for A.J. Heidel.
Wait, didn't they say that on Friday when they were interviewing him? And he said, basically, you figure it out?
That's another bullshit thing that he basically said there. There's absolutely nothing that confirms him to say that. Absolutely nothing. The cops have been lying through their rotten teeth.
You said that he said that?
No, I didn't.
No, who said that he said that?
Oh, I think it was Lavelle, and it was I don't know. There was two of them that managed it, but I think Lavelle is one of them. And Lavelle has been caught fibbing as well, left, right, and center, especially when it comes to him interrogating. Lavelle claimed that he interrogated Oswald at the beginning before Captain Fritz took him over.
You know, Larry K. Hancock has an article saying that Doughty passed the information to Jones in the afternoon.
Well, that's the thing. The source of the actual phone call, which happens by 1 o'clock, which is also another thing. But he said Jones said that it was happening between 1 and 2. Well, Oswald's arrested at 10 to 2, comes in at about 4 minutes past 2. So that's a really tight schedule to run. There is no name for that particular officer, DPD officer, that is calling Robert E. Jones as such. If you look at, what's his name?
But when we identify the information as originating with Doughty, that's what Larry says.
Well, it's possible. I mean, because, what's his name? Stringfellow is also mentioned, Don Stringfellow. And because Don Stringfellow, he's on a, another, report mentioned in the evening as such. And again, people say that's not true. There are people from military intelligence who said, the whole thing is rubbish, never happened. We don't have that information in his file and so forth. Basically, the FBI created legends. Yeah. When you start putting it all into a time frame and really like put it in the chronology, and some of the moves of the FBI look incredibly fishy. I mean, the first person I listened to of the oral history was Nat Pinkston. Because Nat Pinkston was allegedly the first FBI agent who walked into the Texas School Book Depository in about half an hour after the assassination as such. And I thought, well, that's quite late considering, but be it as it may. And I'm thinking, that's a bit strange. And then you start thinking about, okay, he makes his first report, and this is the most pivotal report with regards to the second floor lunchroom encounter and why it is actually fictitious. Is that Pinkston starts to interview Roy Truly after the end of the first interrogation of Oswald. Now, Oswald's interrogated between roughly 2:30, 2:45, to about 4 o'clock, 4:05. And there are things said during that talk and that are pivotal with regards to Pinkston's report, because Pinkston's report mentions really clearly about the rifles inside the building. Now, Oswald said that during his first interrogation about the 22 and the 33, or the shotgun, or what's his name, who came in 2 days before to show the rifles. He was basically relaying that info. And with that, then the FBI, of course, called headquarters, and headquarters called Pinkston and say, interview Truly and ask about the rifles. So that helped me timestamp that particular report, and I'm going, this is happening late afternoon, early evening. And then that one, he mentions the second floor lunchroom encounter in a really rough way, but still. And yet, there is no mention of a second floor lunchroom encounter during while Hostie and Booker are present during that particular first interrogation as such. The only thing is that he said he got a Coke for his lunch, not went for a Coke after. And that's what they do. They twist that little thing. Oswald gave him the ammunition, the info about the second floor and the lunchroom. But Oswald said, I went there to get a Coke for my lunch. And they basically made it sound and look that he went there, up there, after the shooting to get a Coke. Boom.
Alright, I'm gonna break in here for just, I love Bart's rants, but I gotta break in here. I see David Denton getting all warm and, yeah, there we go. I see David Denton get all warm and cozy all there. So, I know he joined us a little late today, but, I want to discuss the upcoming conference.
Can I just mention something real quick before you go into that?
Yeah, real quick, Larry.
Yeah. Everybody, you know, mentioning about Dealey Plaza and what happened in Dealey Plaza at PSPD. My good friend and actually sometimes collaborator, Vince Salandria,
whom I knew, I had the honor of knowing for a while. And while I was writing my book, you know, I would send him, you know, some of the stuff I was, and he would read it and give me his comments. And he told me, you know, Dealey Plaza is a sideshow, you know. Dallas is a sideshow. You have to go up to the deep state. That is where you're going to find, you know, who killed JFK, obviously the government. And he went and he sent me, said, you want to work on something closer to the Dealey Plaza in Dallas? Well, he sent me this file. I'm going to show you right here. Oops, let me get the video going here. All right. This is from Vincent Solander. I don't know if you guys can make it out there at the top. Okay, and this is his file on Igor Baganov. Anybody heard of Igor Baganov?
Oh, yeah. He's a character.
That's right. That's the Lithuanian guy who kidnaps this girl, young girl, underage. He had worked for General Electric, and he is seen in the immediate vicinity of the Tippit murder. And so is his car, his automobile. And he sent me all this stuff, okay, his sources on that. He said, why don't you go ahead and investigate this?
Okay. Baganoff was a Philly guy. Vince would have been there. He was from Philly, Baganoff.
That's right. That's why he suspected him and his involvement. And he sent me his file on Baganoff. I haven't even had a chance to go through this, but I've read some of this stuff. And he's got a lot of good points in here, you know. And he went ahead and made copy of it, and he sent it to me. Jesus, this must have been maybe like 8 years ago, you know, when he passed away. You know, it was very, you know, traumatic. And he actually told me about his lunch meeting with Arlen Specter, whom he also knew very well. And he told me that towards the end of Specter's life, he was a broken man. And that Specter had this meeting, lunch meeting with him, and he was actually trying to seek some kind of redemption, you know, because he
right.
knew. Yeah. And
he's done wrong.
Right. He knew what he had done. Okay, so that's my two cents.
Okay, Larry. Okay, so let me get David Ditton up here real quick. Do a quick share screen. Of course, you can find information not only at projectgfk.com, but also the www.jfkhistorical.com. For those that have already signed up, great. We look forward to seeing you either in person or on Zoom. But for those that haven't, that are watching this on YouTube in the replay, you can scroll down and find out the information about our next conference. It's going to be held. This is the first time we've been putting on a conference in Memphis, Tennessee. It's going to be at the Crown Plaza, downtown Memphis, April 13th through the 15th of 2023. So you've only got about 12 days before the conference is going to happen. David, is this the most up-to-date schedule, or do you want me to pull it off the Word document that you just sent me? Let me see. No, your microphone's on mute, Dave.
Okay. You got me?
Yeah, I got you now.
Okay, yeah. I believe so. We were working on it. My assistant and I were working on it Friday. I think one of the things that was needed to be up there, I think Larry's Schnapp gave me his title. I'm not sure if I've got that in his presentation, but it's basically, there may be a couple of specific adjustments on it. It is this constant ongoing thing, but right now I think our lineup is pretty well set. We're working on our bios right now. I know we've got several guys that are here today. They're being involved in the conference, sending me information. We're trying to get that up to date as well. But we're pretty close to being on track here with the, you know, you can go onto the website there and get a good insight into what, you know, what the conference is going to be all about. Before I get into that, I just want to quickly add to the conversation a bit on something that you guys have been discussing the Tippit murder a little bit. I know, and I didn't catch all of it, but I do want to point out I've been in contact with, or actually he was in contact with me, with Gavin McMahon, who's an Australian researcher. I think some of you guys might be familiar with him. He's done some work that's, he's about to release a paper. I don't want to steal his thunder, but he's done some good work on the Tippit murder, specifically as it pertains to Helen Markham. And I would say some new information that might shed new light on that story. And he's going to be coming out with it soon. Specifically, I don't like taking other folks' stuff and throwing it out there before they have a chance to do it. But I think he's found some actual connections between Markham and her family members with Oswald, being in the same neighborhood and whatnot. So that's interesting. I just want to throw that out, be looking for that. But as far as the conference is concerned, we're obviously really excited about it. We have a good turnout. I'm bringing 14 of my college students with me, and I'm excited about that. So we're going to have a good contingent of college students there. We've got quite a bit of a different group in terms of speakers. We have some folks that have done it before, you know, but a lot of new topics. It's not, for those of you who might have been or joined us on Zoom in Dallas, it's not going to be the same old, same old.
This is going to be a completely different conference than what we put on in December, in November of last year. So if you think, well, hey, I just saw the Dallas conference, they're not going to discuss anything new. We are going to discuss stuff that is going to be new. Let me just give a quick rundown of who our speakers are going to be, David.
Okay.
Well, there's obviously going to be yourself, Ed Tatro. There's going to be Randy Benson, Mal Hyman. William Clapper is going to be there. Dr. John Newman. We're going to have, obviously, I'm going to do a couple presentations. Bragg and Storper, Ryan Jones. We're going to go and do another panel. We had a great panel with Leslie Sharp, Alan Kent, J. Gary Shaw, and Casey Quinlan in Dallas. We're going to put on a panel on MLK featuring Ryan Jones, Dan Storper, Joe Green, and Ed Tatro. Mal Hyman is going to be our narrator. Larry Rivera is going to be there to do a presentation. Larry Snaff, Lisa Peace, Bill Simpage. I already mentioned Dr. Newman. He's also going to come back and give us a little bit of stuff for the hour before he does his keynote. But we've got an incredible lineup. I mean, this is our first time being in Memphis to do a conference. But the nice part about it is, just like Dallas, you're going to get a chance to return to the scene of the crime. Now, this isn't the JFK assassination scene of the crime. This is for Martin Luther King Jr.'s scene of the crime. We're going to go to the Lorraine Hotel. That's going to be on Friday. So we've got a little bit of a sneak peek on Thursday with a couple of presentations by Ed and David. And then Friday, it will start out at looks like 8:30, and we'll go until about 3 o'clock. 3:30, we're going to go to the Civil Rights Museum. And I've never actually been there. I've driven by it when I was a truck driver. I've never actually been able to get out and walk around and check it out, so I'm excited about that. I hope that everybody that's in attendance is going to be excited as well. This is included in your ticket price, getting a chance to go to the Civil Rights Museum and be able to see the hotel room, stand there. If you've ever been to Washington, D.C., I know I just did it in 2019, to be able to stand there where MLK gave his I Have a Dream speech, that's very moving, you know. And then getting a chance to visit where, you know, the shots rang out and took his life, I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. And if you've never had that opportunity to do it, definitely being in person for that. Unfortunately, there will not be live streaming during the tour of the Civil Rights Museum. So those of you that are on Zoom, I'm going to try to take cameras with me, and of course I've got to abide by what the, you know, regulations are there, but I'm going to try to get some film footage, and then what I'll do is I'll upload it to the YouTube channel,
So, I mean, everybody will be able to chance to see it, if I get a chance to film there. On Saturday, it's going to be a marathon day. If you've been to our conferences, either online or in person, we kind of run a full schedule. We'll start out at 9 a.m. and we're going to go until about, 9:15 that night. So, Sunday morning, we're going to have, some small group gatherings with speakers if they're available in the hotel lobby. Again, that will not be on Zoom. And then, for those of you that come in person, you get a discount on visiting the Keens, the other Keen of Tennessee. You get a chance to get a discount at Graceland, Elvis Presley's Graceland. Again, another place I haven't got a chance to visit, but, you know, kind of excited about that.
How do we get that?
How do you get what? The discount for Graceland?
Yeah, it definitely is on Sunday.
The only thing you have to do is take, you'll have a lanyard or a badge from the conference. I've already got it set up, so when you go there, they have one package deal. I'll have a handout that we'll have at the conference.
What day?
For those attending in person.
What day is that?
It's going to be on Sunday, and you can go at, on Sunday, you can go at any time you want. We're not doing a group deal where you have to be there at a certain amount of time until a certain amount of time. You can get there at whatever time you want when they're open on Sunday to get the discount to take the tour. But with having the lanyard or the badge, both, that's probably the best way to do it.
Wow. Because my dad recorded Elvis.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I used to be an Elvis impersonator back in the day.
He was head of RCA recording operations. He used to go there and record Elvis.
I'll be damned. Okay. Well, hey, if you haven't had that opportunity, take it, you know. And, hey, you save a little bit of money, too. So that's always a bonus.
Well, I want to get into Graceland. Does the level that this bonus is for get you inside the building itself?
The discounted ticket gets you into Graceland. It gets you across the street. You can, I believe it tours the plane, his cars. But you actually get a chance to go into Graceland, yes. And then you'll also, at the end of the tour, you walk by the grave sites. And unfortunately, just since Lisa Marie passed away, you know, she's entombed there also. So, yeah.
Well, I'll get the tickets in advance. So you're saying I can just buy them that day?
Yeah, you can't buy them in advance to get the discount, because in order to get the discount, you have to show up at the gate with your badge or your neck lanyard. But like I say, they already know that, that I've already got it set up. So that way you just go in, you buy your ticket. I think it's 70 or 75 bucks, but it's cheaper than what it would be if it was full price.
You know how long the tour is?
The tour is between an hour and a half and 3 hours, but you can, you know, you can knock a little bit of time off that if you don't want to go. I mean, if you're going to pay the price.
Airline stuff.
Right, absolutely. But if you're going to pay the price, you might as well see everything that you can. But, of course, you know, it's kind of self-guided. So, you know, the faster you walk, hey, the faster you'll get through it.
Well, I did it once before. I recommend it. It's unbelievable.
Hey, Dave?
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Guy, a couple other things. Well, we got Bill there. Bill, we were going through the titles. I don't believe I've gotten an actual title for your presentation. I kind of speculated on that. We can update your title on our schedule if you'd like. You might want to, if you just want to send me something in the email specifically about what you'd like to have as a title of your presentation. Okay.
I'll polish it a little bit, but you basically got it right. I'll get you that box today.
Now, my understanding, you're wanting to come in on Wednesday night, right, Bill?
Yeah, I'd like to get there on the 12th. Yeah.
Yeah, there won't be a lot of folks there, but I will be there, so maybe we can get together. So, okay.
That'd be great. Look forward.
And Larry, are you talking to Larry Snapp, or are you talking like you might be interested in actually coming? I know we were planning on Zoom, but
No, I'm coming.
You are coming. All right. Well, we've got to figure out a hotel room situation for you then.
I was making a reservation tonight for the hotel.
Okay. Make sure, if you do that, we might have to go through an intermediary on that, because we've kind of gone past our deadline of rooms. But if you're definitely coming, I will make a contact to
Or just give me the name, email me the name of the person.
Yeah, I will do that. She, if you want to contact her directly, hopefully we can still get that covered up, okay?
Do I have to do anything on my end, David, or am I okay?
You should be good. I would need, I know you're having a friend coming with you. I could probably need to have that person's name so I could add it to the hotel room.
Okay? I sent it by email already.
Okay. All right.
So just email her name and I'll call her because I was going to make a reservation online tonight.
Okay. Good. Good. And like Dave said, I mean, I think we probably have two major objectives for this conference, I would say. It was number one is bring as much light to possible with the in regards to the King assassination. We're on the ground, we're there. And then obviously very relevant to the newly classified documents. I know a lot of folks and Bill's done work, Larry. I've done some things. I think we're gonna cover some ground as that as well. I know. And then some divergent topics. Obviously, Dave's going to do some more on Jimmy Hoffa. And also Medgar Evers. We felt like it was important to cover that issue, and Dave's going to do that as well. So,
yeah,
got a great lineup, and we're excited. And even if you can't make it face-to-face, if you're interested in coming, or if you're interested in coming face-to-face, you should. The room situation, our block of rooms is kind of, is filled up right now, but I think we can make arrangements if anybody would like to still come in person. But we're really going to start pushing the Zoom angle too, starting next week. Great opportunity either way to be a part of this conference. So,
and also,
everybody, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Dave. I want to point this out. On the JFKHistorical.com, you can click on the conference tab. When you open up the webpage, you'll just scroll right down. You can purchase the in-person tickets on this button here where it says purchase tickets. If you want to do the Zoom portion of the conference, you can just click the virtual ticket purchase option on this location, on this button. And either one of those will get you your two tickets. Obviously, if you're in person, you don't need a Zoom one and vice versa. But you can choose which tickets you want to purchase. You can click on the events details or accommodations. We want to make this event, is it going to be as big as Dallas? No. But, does it have potential for that? Yes. We're trying to get some, input and have people from actually on the ground in Memphis to attend as well. So we want to make this, I'm not for sure the last time a conference or if a conference has been done, on this type of scale that we're trying to do. If it's ever been done or if it's been done like this, but we want to raise awareness to it and we'll see how this year goes. We'll decide at that point, is it something we'll revisit in the future? Speaking of what Dave said a while ago, I'm doing a presentation on Medgar Evers. This is the 60th anniversary of, his assassination as well. So, I think you guys would be, impressed with what I've got going on that. It's not something I've just been working on for about a year. It's something I've been working on for about 3 years. And I know Ryan Jones is going to, step in at the end of my presentation and add some more information to it. I know he's excited about it. He's talked about wanting to do Medgar Evers in the past as well. So that's kind of a nice little add-on. And then of course I'll have a Jimmy Hoffa part two presentation from Connecting the Dots series that I'm working on.
David, can I add something? Dan Storfer here.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'd mentioned to you that I do have some Medgar Evers information I'd like to share with you, but one of the things for those people who are primarily interested in the JFK story, I'm pretty sure, and certainly in the cases that I'm involved with, there'll be some connections between the MLK and JFK assassination background, backstory. So, stay tuned or, I suggest you try and tune in for some of these sessions. And, there is even a session on RFK. So I think the idea and there are some remarkable connections, between events like the Medgar Evers assassination and MLK story, that also have some connection, deep connection to the JFK story. So, again, you know, I think you'll find it interesting.
Yeah, and Dan, I tell you what, if you have anything that anything that you have on Evers, I am putting the last bit of polishing on that. Not like I can't go back and add some more slides. So if you have anything that you send me an email with whatever you've got, and that would be helpful.
I will.
All right. Well, I like to say again, I look forward to everybody that appears in person, speakers and attendees, and also those, of course, on Zoom. I know I had a few people ask me who is going to be strictly just our online presenters. Dave, you want to tell us? I know it's a strong amount of people that's going to be showing up in person as far as speakers goes. We only have, I believe, is it two, Dave? It's going to be just strictly.
Basically, right now, the only online person that we have bringing in, Joe Green, is going to be participating in our MLK panel. He won't be able to make it in person. But other than that, I mean, we are a pretty much a live event right now, Dave, I mean, as far as we're concerned. And I think people appreciate that. I mean, people have been to conferences when half the speakers are not face-to-face. I'm a history instructor, professor in a college, and I know I prefer having a face-to-face interaction with people. I think, a lot of students take online classes but because it's convenient, but I think more often than not, they feel like they get more out of it if you're in person. So, I'm just using that as a metaphor, but I think, it'd be great for folks to make it in person and get to interact, particularly with our speakers. We try to make them available and during the course of the weekend. That's one advantage of being there in person. But having Dave Knight as your tech guy, we're going to have a top-notch Zoom presentation as well for that weekend. You can count on that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Dave. And the other part that I like up until the pandemic happened, I mean, we were always doing in person and we weren't doing much, hybrid. We weren't doing anything with just strictly online until that happened. And then we went online and then I started developing hybrid conferences. And what's nice about that on the hybrid model is even if you can't attend in person, don't wait until the DVDs or the flash drives come out. Buy the Zoom ticket and be there live in person because you never know what there may be a question that you have that you want to ask directly to that speaker. Well, it's kind of hard to ask that question if you wait till the videos come out. Speaking of which, I do want to throw it out again. I said at the beginning of the show, we'll say it again. The Dallas 2022 conference flash drives and digital copies will be available within the next 12 days. I will send an email out on that, and then there'll be probably a YouTube snippet video that'll appear. But you'll be able to pick up copies of them in Memphis if you show up for the conference. And if you don't show up and you're on Zoom, you can still order one through projectjfk.com. Email me directly at projectjfk@yahoo.com, or you can give me a call at 913-980-5351.
Question, David, if I could just ask it. I've been looking. I want to interview the guy who does the YouTube videos called No True Flags here. And his videos are something else, but I don't know if his identity is even public.
I know I've seen some information about the videos, but I have not actually watched. I don't think I've watched any, and I don't know a contact information for the guy. But perhaps maybe there might be an email we could find if anybody in the audience knows. Give that channel name again.
No True Flags here. I've gotten some good posts about it already, but nobody seems to know his identity. And
okay.
He is a character. I mean, some of his stuff's terrific. Some of it, I'll leave it right there. It's fascinating.
I have one more thing, Dave, if I could jump
go
in.
Go ahead.
Let's be clear on this, folks, that we are making definite plans for Dallas too in November. I mean, we're focused on this one in Memphis right now in April, but as soon as we get this thing done, as soon as Dave and I recharge our batteries a bit, we're making big plans for November in Dallas, and we hope folks can will join us for that, for the 60th. It should be an important event, and we'll be releasing material and information about that later this spring. But it is something definite that's coming as well. Okay.
Yeah, hey, definitely I think what my plan is, Dave, I know once we get done with the Memphis conference, then I'm probably looking towards the end of that week when we get back to start ironing out some outline of a detail. And then, like I say, as soon as we have information, if you're a speaker that's in the audience watching this and you want to present, make sure that you let us know what you want to present. Get that to me and David both, so that way we can make the list of who's going to be our speakers, because those spots fill up fast, and we want to go with quality over quantity. But, you know, with being the 60th anniversary, if you were there for the 50th, I know I was doing JFK Lancer back then, doing the audiovisual, and we went for, you know, quite a few days. This one here, I'm hoping we can do like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and maybe a half a day Sunday conference. You know, it's, you know, not try to just shove it in 2 days. But like I say, we'll discuss that, and also, you know, hotels and things of that nature. And obviously costs. So, you know, if you guys like what we're doing, donate to the JFK Historical Group, donate to Project JFK. That's what gets these things to go. You know, and for those of you that are in the audience, live here and also watching that have made donations, thank you so much for what you've done and continue to do, because that's helping, you know, not only keep the lights on for the website and the show, but it's helping with the conferences. So, you know, we all have to come together financially in order to pull it off. We can't just, you know, we're not all independently wealthy, and unless one of us wins the lottery, and shit, I play, but yeah, unless one of us wins the lottery, we can't do this on our own. You know, we got to have help. It takes a community, a village, to, you know, do justice to what we're trying to get done.
Hey, both Davids, this is Dan again. I just want to encourage you to reach out with a clear link to the conference and mention that it's available on Zoom, because several people have asked me, and I don't think it's, you know, I know David Denton has sent out a couple of emails and talked about the panel people to the panelists, but I think there's a broad audience of people who need to know about it. So, and then encourage people to share the links, social networking, et cetera, so that in the last couple of weeks you get a little bit more of a buzz and a following and more people joining on Zoom.
Yeah, we will push the Zooms. I mean, we've obviously been all over the social networks on the conference and general. Now we are kind of going to want to transition to the Zoom part. That's where, you know, the Zoom audience is more of a late sign up thing than the, you know,
yeah,
making an earlier commitment. We're really going to try to focus on that. Got a lot of things Dave and I can attest, man. I mean, every day it gets a little crazier, and we're trying to
keep
up. If I don't get, you know, some of you guys ask questions, some of you sent me emails, and I do the best I can. Sometimes we may run a few days behind, but we try to stay up with everybody.
Are you trying to get some sleep? Do you need to sleep for a couple hours every night?
Well, we manage.
We need at least 2 hours of sleep. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. We need our beauty rest, but we don't get it too much, so that's why we look the way we do.
Dave. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it too, Dave. I mean, when it comes around conference time, it's usually the last 30 days. We eat, breathe, sleep, and everything else. Nothing
and
about the conference.
And
yeah,
constant phone calls.
Exactly. That's what we do.
Yeah. But hey, it's rewarding when the reward is when we actually pull it off and it turns out halfway decent, right, Dave? We feel like we've accomplished something, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yep. Dave. I mean, we do this, you know, I mean, what me and Dave got into, not only in Dallas, but what we're doing now in Memphis as well, is trying to put out something that, you know, you guys are going to want to attend, something that you're going to get information out of. We don't just do this because, you know, oh, well, hey, it's around that time of the year, let's do it. No, we do it for a reason.
We do it for you guys. We do it. Not only do we do it for us, but we also do it for you guys. I mean, you're the main reason. I just saw in the chat log as far as, you know, what's the date potentially for Dallas? Rick, thanks for asking that question. I mean, this year I can look here on the calendar and it's November 22nd is going to be the day right before Thanksgiving. So if we were to do it, like, say, the weekend before, which is usually when we do assassination weekend, you'd be looking at the 16th through the 19th. That would be the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So usually I'm used to spending my birthday with you guys. So, that's usually the way it is. And hey, if you're in person and we're on the, we're doing the conference during the weekend, you can always buy me a beer. Just throw that out there.
Hey, we definitely need to, get the whole, you know, nail down the hotel and stuff because
I've already started working on, different hotels. So I've got it narrowed down to about five hotels, that's on my list, the ones that I've used either in the past or, new ones I want to check into. So yeah, I want to get the hotel narrowed down, probably within, I would say no later than the end of May.
About the latest you can do.
Yeah.
Have you guys taken over Judith's conference? Cause she used to go to the Crown at one point and then she went someplace else. I don't know where Cap is going to do theirs. Just, you know.
Well,
can I say something? I'm getting emails from Dawn, about, it's not technically Judith's conference anymore. Okay. She's sort of like moved aside and now, Don Ratliff and other people are organizing that. With that said, maybe it should, you know, like we did this past year in Dallas, you know, do some kind of combination or something like that because, they're already sending out emails.
I thought you guys said you were taking it over.
It's a group, that are, you know, is Dave still?
Dave, you want to answer that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've kind of taken over the operations of it. I mean, obviously, the JFK Conferences LLC is the group that had worked on it before, and several of those folks, including Larry, I think Larry's a member, so am I. I mean, there's obviously some overlap there, but, you know, we're the ones actively, you know, and Don Ratley mentioned Don. Don's, you know, a member of that group, and I would say the key players, you know, the folks that really, the organizers of the event last November and this November were going to be Dave, myself, and Don's really a central figure in that as well. So yeah, I mean, it's basically, that's the gist of the operation, I would say. Yeah. There was another question there and I forgot. Somebody else had something there, in that regard about Dallas. What I was going to say is I believe that, Kappa is going to be in Pittsburgh in November. Are you not aware of that?
Yes, Dr. Wex having his 16th.
Yeah. So we'll probably be the only game in town as far as Dallas is concerned.
Well,
I say that there'll be some other events going on, obviously.
But they also have Judith conference.
Well,
there will not be not have a conference.
Whoever, that was my question, is the Judith group going to have, what was the Judith group, going to have a separate conference from you guys? Because then you're competing for hotels and
people. No. That's not the case. They're basically in collaboration with us now. I mean, and we've kind of like turned over the keys, so to speak.
Okay, right? That's why I was trying to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I have not heard anything from JFK Lancer whether they're going to do another conference. The last few years, the only thing they've been doing is, you know, online. No liveness to it other than the fact that people record videos, send it to them, and then they play it during, you know, a live stream.
but you can't ask questions. You can't interact with the speakers. So I think for the
you can ask questions, but it goes to the Facebook page.
Yeah, so there you go. Right. I think as far as live, in person, hybrid, online, we're going to be, like Dave said, we're going to be the only conference in town that's doing that. I'm not against that. You know, I think what we did in Dallas last year proved the fact that, you know, as groups coming together to work, we can do it. We pulled it off. It ran smoothly. We had, you know, very minimal hiccups on the other visual side. I know we had a couple microphone issues on Zoom where, hey, you know what? Batteries do die.
The layout was really good, different and good in the sense that it was cozier, you know, because people were in the tables, you know, and sitting in a different type of setting there.
That makes it easier to nail a hotel if you're not competing with Lancer and Kappa and Judith, you know.
I couldn't agree more. I know it's you know, setting up hotels and doing conferences over the last, I've been doing it since the last 15 years down there. Mm-hmm. You kind of get into not only bidding wars, but pissing wars with everybody because, hey, we're all trying to do something, you know, the same weekend at different hotels across the city, and it gets to be a pain in the ass. So, yeah, I'm kind of hopeful that it is just going to be a, you know, our conference. So
I remember when I was planning for Kappa that there was another conference that used to be in Dallas the second or third week in November, and they oftentimes consumed a lot of hotel space. So you just may want to move quicker than later.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Chris Gallup will probably have his thing in Mansfield, which is his luncheon that he does. But luckily, you know, we don't compete with each other on that. Chris usually does his during the week, and then we hit the weekend because he's usually there selling books and stuff at the conference.
He posted something there already about it.
Yeah. So I think it'll be a big event, more, like I say, definitely more than just a couple days. But yeah, I know how Bart said we'll go with the 60th, but hey, the anniversaries, when it comes into the 10 years, that's when more people come down, and hopefully we'll have more younger people come in, that maybe have never been to a JFK conference before.
Well, this would also be likely the last big one, because when you get to 70 years, you know, a lot of people.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Right. You're absolutely right. I mean, well.
It seems like, well, I don't even want to think about that. So
I remember taking part back in the 50th. I was supposed to just be a director down there of the conference and wound up actually running the whole damn thing. Long story, I won't go into it, but. You know, we kind of said after the 50th, you know, that was when everybody was going to kind of hang it up. Well, 10 years later, we're still doing it. But nice part about it is, I think, not just strictly JFK, but by David bringing in the political assassination of the 1960s, it gives us, you know, other topics to talk about that link back to JFK. Obviously, Dallas is, you know, JFK, but there's all these other different, you know, strings that attach to the story, you know, background, connections, so on. And, you know, like I say in Hoffa, connecting the dots.
Yeah.
So I think the route that we're going is definitely keeping, you know, people interested and maybe getting new people in that, you know, aren't just JFK buffs or, you know, history research buffs on JFK, but they want to know about MLK or RFK, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X. So.
Plus, you also need to consider that after I've been, there's not much going to be left of Dallas.
Well, yeah, that's the other issue. I don't know what's going on with that redesign. It looks like it was only planning, and it wasn't really, you know, a real thing yet. But, you know, they were planning on redoing Dallas, Dealey Plaza.
Well, and who knows? We do know what happened during the 50th. I mean, we couldn't even get into Dealey Plaza unless you had a ticket, to be able to even go down there. Nice part about it was freezing fucking cold. So, I mean, I was happy staying warm watching it on the TV, but, you know, we have no idea what Dallas is going to look like come this November.
Hope the QAnon crowd doesn't take over like they did.
Oh God.
That was not a good look.
He will rise again.
Oh shit.
That we did with getting Trump out of jail.
There you go.
That was some serious deluded shit when I just read that these people were there and they said like,
oh yeah,
JFK will rise again, and I just thought,
The 50th.
Frankly, the QAnon people put more people there than we did, which is disturbing, you know.
There you go. I remember the 50th was like almost like a fucking carnival atmosphere, and I'm just this is right. Not what this is about, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping that part that aspect stays out of the 60th. So
it'd be nice to see some elements to be closed down from a research point of view, and you know, it doesn't have to be the Veekman and the Donnell film, but just overall, just the findings and of new research and so forth, and basically put forward that helps to present a better picture of what we dealt with. I mean, you know, so no talk of David Atlas Phillips instead of that, have something more informed put forward. That would be nice. And, you know, because I myself, I think I really want to put this whole thing behind me after the 60th. And, you know, because I've just been so deeply ingrained into it, and that I just went, no, you know what? There's more to life than just this whole Kennedy thing.
Is there?
Is there? No. Well, there wasn't for 10 years for me. I mean, I started reading about it again after a hiatus because I was interested in the 90s, and I didn't get back into it until, 2011 again, from late 90s to 2011. Started reading books, this, that, and the other. Then in 2013, I made a multi-touch application out. And then...
You really need to get a drink.
No. Sober is best.
Okay.
So, absolutely. You think I'm ranting now? Just give me a bottle of JD and listen to me then.
Oh, my God.
And, but, you know, for me, it's like I've just maxed out when it comes to the information and all that. It's only that now I've got these interviews to go through. And after that, I'm just going like, well, unless something really big comes towards me, I don't want to know about it, to be honest, you know.
I would like to interject one thing, and it usually happens around anniversary dates. The powers that be just needs to know that just because this is the 60th anniversary, they still need to give us the information and the documents. We're not just going to go away once November hits and give up on the case. We're going to be here.
And the media is going to take care of the disinformation for you.
I think they know from the lawsuit that we're not giving up.
Right. Yeah, I just want to put that, my two cents out there that, you know, even though this is the 60th, and I appreciate what Bart's saying, it doesn't mean that, you know, after this year, oh, well, shit, it doesn't matter anymore. It still matters. And with what Larry's doing along with Bill, what all of us are doing as researchers, I mean, you know, it's okay to take a pause, but you take a pause and you get right back to it. So.
No, I took a pause, and now I want a pause. I mean, I've just been so deep in it. 16-hour days. Fuck that. I've had enough. And, you know, I've been so, so deeply ingrained into it.
No, and how many marriages? You know how many marriages this thing is?
My girlfriend, actually, I've got a very understanding girlfriend, in all honesty.
I've got one.
That goes only so far.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. You know, you can only, like, spend that much time on one subject. It's also at some point you got to make your other half the subject again, and you know, just get back into it. That's another thing. I might move to Portugal end of this year. So
really,
yeah. You know, I've been in 30 years in London. I mean, I'm from the Netherlands, so and I've lived in Italy before, and I've been to Lisbon before, and I might just go out and chill and get some better weather and you know, near the Mediterranean and the Atlantic Ocean, and it's just lovely over there. I've been to Lisbon four or five times.
There.
Yeah, it's good.
First question to ask, you know.
No, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, but you know what? The healthcare here in England is free, but the quality of it is like that. So, and everybody always says, oh, go private, you know? So it's like, just go private because you jump the queue. That's the thing. And otherwise, there's no point. But, you know, it's nice to have the NHS and get your prescriptions for free and stuff like that. So, which is quite nice, but, and cheap. But, other than that, you know, Britain, I've been in London for 30 years now.
We gotta put you on stand up at one of the conferences. Like, you can be like the entertainer for the dinner.
Fuck that. I'd rather just obliterate everyone with evidence. That's why it's much better. So, that's my entertainment. So, just stuff so much evidence in everyone's face that they go, please stop! So, and I also, if I go to Dallas, I do it once, and that's it. So, I need a break from it because it's just been too much. And, you know, this book as well, I wanted to finish this damn book by Christmas and I'm still messing about with it. So, you know, enough's enough. And every time it's like, oh, you need to research this as well. Oh, you need to research that, blah, blah, blah. Youth House of Oswald as well. I want to
imagine what it's like writing briefs. Bill and I sometimes have to just pull our head out of the. It's unbelievable.
Hey, I do want to throw this out there. Of course, you know me, I'm the audiovisual guy, so this shit, you know, comes on my plate. The White House Plumbers TV series with Woody Harrelson. It was supposed to be out on HBO. In March. Well, guess what, everybody? March is come and gone. So they've done an update. It came out yesterday. It's supposed to arrive now. It's a 5-part miniseries. It's supposed to now arrive in May of this year. So hopefully, if it's going to be on HBO Max. Okay. If you have not seen the preview, it's like a 1-minute preview. You got to see it. I can't show it here, but you definitely want to check out the preview. But again, May is when that's going to arrive. And this month in April, Waco, The Aftermath. I don't know how many people around here.
I saw a little thing about that.
But
yeah,
the Waco Aftermath is going to be, and talk about connecting dots. The Waco, from what the way preview is, and I've gotten some write-ups on it, it's going to be not only Waco itself, but it leads into the aftermath, which, of course, leads into the first one started at Ruby Ridge and went to Waco. This one is going to go from Waco in the aftermath to Oklahoma City. And then it looks like it might go a little bit further. Exactly. He was there when, you know, the barricades were up and was selling, you know, stickers and T-shirts before. And if you look at Waco, it happened on the same day. What was it, 2 years later? So, you know, that you want to talk about connections. And like I said before, history is not, it doesn't repeat itself, it echoes. It does, but, you know, it rhymes and echoes. But, I think that's going to be a good series too. I think it's only 5 episodes. It's going to be out, I want to say it was either Amazon Prime or Netflix. You'll have to look it up, but it's called Waco, The Aftermath. And some of the actors, from the original Waco TV series is going to be back in it again. Like Gary Noser, Michael Shannon, he's going to be in there as the, FBI negotiator. The HRT guy, he's going to be back in his role. So like I say, you know, those are a few new series that are coming out. And I keep hearing the rumor mill about Tom Hanks redoing part 2 to The Post.
Second World War thing.
Well, no, this one here, it picks up right where the Post leaves off, and it's, I don't know if he's working on, like, redoing a second version of, or a new version of All the President's Men, but it leads that, if you've seen the movie The Post, it leads right into that at the very end with the security guard reporting the burglary of the Watergate Hotel, so...
I saw a Watergate series with Sean Penn that was on television.
Let's see, the one you're talking about. Gaslight?
Yes, that's it. Yes. I saw that. That was pretty good.
I haven't got a chance to see Gaslight yet, but I definitely want to see that series as well.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's entertaining. I mean,
from what I understand.
I mean, I didn't recognize Sean Penn as this at all.
Yeah.
And, you know what? That was like, whoa, that's Penn. I was like, whoa.
Well, if you ever get a chance to see the, it was on Showtime. It was called The Loudest Voice with Russell Crowe. And he's in a fat suit playing the part of, Roger Ailes, went for the whole, you know, Fox News, lawsuit. You would not recognize Russell Crowe when you see him. I mean, it looks, I mean, when I saw the preview for Sean Penn in Gaslight, I mean, it's amazing what they can do with, you know, prosthetics.
Yeah, because he's what's his name? George Mitchell. So yeah. The build of his face and the double chin and all that, and then all of a sudden, and you do not think that's Sean Penn. I mean, when I saw Sean Penn in Carlito's Way, I said to my pal, who was an actor, I said to him, like, my God, Penn is awesome as a lawyer. And he went,
right.
And he went, that's Sean Penn? I was like, my God, are you in this industry or what? Wake up. But this time, I really had to look on IMDb, and I was like, whoa, this is Sean Penn. I was like, I did not recognize him at first at all. And he does a, you know, as usual, a grand job. So, yeah, that was a good watch, Gaslight. That's
and
just fun to watch.
Amazon Prime has the MK Ultra series.
Oh yes. Have you got a chance to see that yet?
I started watching. It is very dark. The guy that plays the principal psychiatrist is Captain Kirk on the new Star Trek series.
Oh, Anson Mount.
Yeah.
I think his name is?
Yes.
Yeah, I got through the first episode. I haven't got a chance to go back and revisit it. I've been busy editing videos for like the last 2 weeks, and I just started going to college last month. So earning a degree in college, gotta go for a whole different type of new job. I can't go back to truck driving anymore. So hey, get a degree in IT.
You can't. It's not a series that you can binge on because it's just really dark.
Yeah.
If you watch.
What's
it
called?
MK Ultra.
MK Ultra.
Oh my, yes, I've got that on my drive. I haven't watched it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. If you watch.
Well, of course it's dark.
Yeah.
If you watch the Unabomber series, I forget who has that. Maybe Netflix, but.
Are you talking about Manhunt Unabomber?
Well, it's a 5-part series on Chad Krasinski and interviews his brother quite a bit.
Yeah,
but one whole episode's devoted to what he went through.
Yes.
You know, with basically the MK Ultra experience that he had to deal with in college, you know.
Yeah, they did two seasons of Manhunt. One was the Unabomber, and then the other one was Richard Jewell. I know they're working on a third season, but I don't believe that's been brought out yet. But yeah, that was a really good series too. As a matter of fact, the guy that plays Ted Kaczynski is the one that plays Vision on some of the Marvel movies. He's a great actor. I think he's English.
Has anyone seen Cocaine Bear yet?
No. my son wants to see that.
I've seen it. It's got some really funny bits. I've got to say, Elizabeth Banks did quite a good job in filming the whole thing, and actually what was only a small event and turned it into a whole movie as such, and I thought that was pretty good. But there's a scene when you see that first scene, when the bear gets introduced, think about me. That's me basically when you see that. All right, when you see that,
I'm definitely gonna have to watch that.
I thought the CGI was pretty good, you know. I mean, it's razor sharp, but the bear itself and what it does and how they basically integrated it with the rest of the scenery. But it was better than I thought it was going to be. I thought, it's going to be rubbish, this, that, and the other. But I have to say, kudos to the team that put it together as such. That was quite interesting. Yeah.
All right. Well, I can say I think we're going to bring the meeting to a close. I think we're going to bring the meeting to a close. I hope to see everybody in Memphis, whether you're in person or you're online.
So again, check out jfkhistorical.com or projectjfk.com. And this replay will be up on YouTube, well, hopefully within the next 12 hours. So if you missed out on anything, you can go back and rewatch certain sections again. If anybody else has anything to say, say now, or we're going to bring it to a close.
It's good fun.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks very much. Guys, have a great rest of the weekend, and we will see you in Memphis.
Hey.